This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
A diverse listening audience to get involved in this radio station. Visit kpft.org for information about the program council. This is KPFT Houston.
And you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. What are we calling Judy's segment? This new couch?
This old couch.
Ah, okay, this old.
Excuse me?
Well, see, I've heard this...
That was Chris.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
When Jimmy's talking about this and all this, you know, I go, this sounds familiar. Judy moves in for a little bit. The next thing you know, she's a fixture.
Chris.
Yeah.
I have friends.
Huh?
I have friends, and I can find out where you live.
She'll bring a whole U-Haul full of them.
They'd have to go way outside of the loop.
It's okay. I have friends who can actually breathe outside the loop without the assistance of oxygen tanks.
Okay.
So I will find him one day. He's not referring to me as an old couch. He's talking about my pussy. It just is irritating sometimes.
Wow.
That's Chris.
Well, because it's supposed to be a woman's show, the first hour that, you know, I didn't want to bring up your Dewey pussy, your pussy Dewey.
All right, Chris.
I haven't named my cat.
And that address is, well, my pussy and I together lived on Jimmy's couch for a year.
And
Chris will never let me forget it.
Because I fell in love with her pussy.
He did. Oh, my God. It was embarrassing sometimes.
The Dewey one.
Yeah. Yes, Dewey was my pussy. Yeah. Well, actually, Dewey is my pussy. I took her home with me when I left his couch. This is just so not the show I had in mind.
You're the one who brought up your pussy.
Yes.
I was not going to go there. I didn't want to go anywhere near your pussy, but you're the one who brought him up.
This is Judy Reeves, and we are here talking about the history of transgender, and I don't, if there's a better way to say that, tell me, please.
Trans history.
Exactly. See, I can do that. Yeah. About trans history, it's kind of an oral history here at KPFT After Hours tonight, and with me I have my new sidekick, John Tiska, who I haven't let him say much yet, but I'm sure he will get into this, and our special guest this evening is,
co-host.
What's her name?
Vanessa
Edwards Wasser. That's right. So you were in the middle of.
What was I in the middle of? I lost my place.
We were talking about that last history.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay, so you were talking a little bit about the history earlier, and when
well, lack of history, I guess.
Yeah, lack of history.
It's a short history.
The '80s pre-internet. Mm-hmm. You know, resource-wise, there's not a lot out there. So when you decide to research this procedure, where do you go? I mean, are you talking to physicians? Associations, groups? How do you get your information?
It really kind of depended on the individual and, you know, which direction they were going and whether or not they were actually to a point where they personally felt that they were ready for surgery, for instance. For some of them, they did it via counselors, psychotherapists, and, you know, the medical professionals. But as far as, like, organizations, there really wasn't much in the way of organizations at the time except for cross-dressing organizations. Now, one of the early ones was Virginia Prince, back in the 50s, who had created a cross-dressing organization and was, you know, very, I guess, kind of clandestine about it because there were a lot of anti-cross-dressing laws, even out in California at that point in time, and then the 60s as well. In fact, we had one here in Houston until 1980.
You could literally get arrested.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And they were actually worried about, you know, the police sending someone undercover to actually infiltrate the group. So what she came up with was the Hose and Heels Club, and everybody would bring a couple of sacks with them, one sack lunch and then the other sack with hose and heels in them. And so they would all sit down in the circle, and they would put their two sacks down, And they'd say, okay, well, now we'll go ahead and proceed, and we will, you know, open up our sack and eat our lunch. So they'd all sit there and eat their lunch. And then, you know, after everyone finished the one sack with the lunch, they'd say, okay, well, now we're going to open the other sack. And so, you know, once they actually made it through that and they all pulled out the heels and the hose, that's when they realized, okay, this person's legitimate and they can be part of our club. And they did so, but it was, I guess, a very... kind of a very, well, I don't want to say, God, what's the word I'm looking for? It was actually very frightening for a lot of them going out in public because they were worried about not only the arrests, but the ostracization if they ever were caught. Virginia Prince actually was arrested at one point, and she actually ended up with an FBI file, which, you know, really kind of can kill someone's career, and yeah. Especially back in the 50s and 60s. For other people later on, it was, as I mentioned, there were, I guess, individual little groups across the country that kind of, you know, spawned forth after that, and then that kind of also developed into little get-togethers, conventions, if you will, for the transgender community. The very first one that I'm aware of, in fact, it's the longest running one in the nation still going today. I believe the first one was in 1975. That was Fantasia Fair, and that was up in Provincetown, Massachusetts. And I actually found out about that one myself by reading a Playboy article. That was back in the days when I was trying to, you know, put up the front and, you know, convince myself, no, I'm heterosexual, uh-huh. And, you know, I've got to put these things out of mind. So I actually had a subscription to Playboy, and so I would read the articles.
Read the articles.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would read it from, you know, front to back instead of just going and looking at the foldout.
And what was the article about?
The article was actually about cross-dressers, and I had never heard of that term. The only thing I'd ever heard of were drag queens and, transsexuals. And the only thing I knew of transsexual was Renee Richards, which, you know, as I mentioned earlier, just didn't really appeal to me.
Yeah.
And I had heard of drag queens, obviously, and heard of, you know, the drag shows. And, of course, when my parents caught me cross-dressing when I was 14 and put the fear of death into me, and my dad says, is this what you want to be? You want to be a drag queen? Because your only choices are going to be a hooker or a drag queen, you know, and that's all there is in life. And I kind of thought, well, no, neither of the above. I wanted something else, but it was a very new term for me, and that actually, at least, you know, gave me the inclination to find out more about it. And so about a year and a half later, I ended up going up to the convention up there, and it's still running today. But those types of conventions used to be, I guess, the place where a lot of the community used to gather to find out the information until, I guess, probably the early 90s when personal computers started becoming all the rage and everybody started getting on the internet. Once the internet came on, trans people, for whatever reason, or stereotype as opposed to, you know, like having design flair, you know, I mean, everybody's got their, you know, stereotype. Trans people are techies, mm-hmm. And we're all into computers and programming and websites and the whole bit. And, of course, you know, everybody, all the trans people were, like, on the computers almost as soon as they came out, and
networking.
Of course, then it was like, okay, well, we did internet searches, and it was like, oh my God, there's another one of us. Well, here's
I never put
one.
All that
here's
together until I sit here, my head is just, I'm spinning here. It's like, every single one I know. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. I never put it together before.
I never really understood why. I always had a proclivity for it myself. And
it's just the major way the brain works, I guess. Mm-hmm. Wow.
The only classes I took in college that I made A's in were computer programming, and it was like, I didn't even have to study.
I'm so bad on computers, I'm obviously not a future trans. It's not going to work.
I can take them apart and, you know, put things together.
I can turn them on.
That's good. Well,
I actually built one today. We got a new computer at home, so we went out and bought the parts and we put one together.
Well, maybe trans. Talk to you. That's why you wanted to be here tonight. Okay, now we know.
Okay.
My son's at home, probably still up playing Flight Simulator on
there. Probably go. Or listening to the radio. Whatever.
Yeah.
But that was, I guess, kind of the first community, if you will, mm-hmm. The first organized community, was pretty much kind of the online community. We actually started not only having individual little groups in various cities, but now all of a sudden the groups in the cities really started mushrooming. Virtually every city started, you know, developing their own group instead of just having them in the major cities like New York, Chicago. Now, I remember back in the early and mid-'80s, there was nothing in Texas except for one group in Dallas. And there wasn't anything in Houston. I thought, well, geez, you know.
The only one in Houston.
Exactly. I'm like 400 miles. I was living in Corpus Christi. I was 400 miles from the nearest group. And I thought, wow, you know, I mean, this is bad. But actually, I was a lot better off than a lot of people out in, like, the mountain states. There was.
So if you had to guess or estimate today, mm-hmm. how many transgenders are there in the United States? Maybe I'm putting you on the spot.
It's a very good question, and we don't really have an accurate number.
Could you guess?
The estimated guess is roughly 2% of the population.
Wow.
So, you know, figure out whatever that is, I guess, you know.
Well, we'll just go with the percentages. Too much math for me.
Well, that's 2 in every 100 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, or 1 in every 50, so.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of held out. I've found at least 2 others from my graduating class in high school, and high school was like 729.
No kidding.
So,
wow. Okay.
How did you find out about them?
Just actually, one of them actually showed up at Dr. Cole's in Galveston. There's a doctor that deals with transgenders in his psychotherapy practice. And he has, like, a get-together for all the folks, you know, that are in his practice. And, you know, folks from around the state, and one of them happened to show up. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm from Corpus. And, oh, yeah, I went to Carroll High School. And it was like, wow, really? And sure enough, it was like, oh, God, you know, you're in my class. And the funny thing is she's a twin, or she was a twin, but she transitioned to male. And her sister's, you know, still female and, you know, has... typical wife and kids type of thing, and so
the odds of that happened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really amazing.
Yeah. I've heard of twins that, you know, were identical and, you know, both transitioned, and then I've also heard of others where, you know, one transitioned and the other one didn't. And oddly enough, both of the ones that were one and one were female to male, and the others were male to female. So I don't know. Hmm. If that's kind of, if there's any indicator there,
somewhere,
there, but,
yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's it's just kind of an empirical thing
but
that I noticed.
If you're not, and the one thing I've noticed over the years is if you're not transgender, it's kind of hard to break into the community as an outsider, even just to find out information. I know that, I believe it came out of Galveston, there was a newsletter years and years ago, and I joined the list. I was actually... A transgender person told me about it, and I joined it partly because of GCAM, and we're information gatherers, and partly because I was interested, not curious, interested, and there's a difference to me.
Yeah.
As soon as the newsletter individual who was in charge of it found out, I was like, bump from the list, and I went, wait a minute. I emailed him, I said, why can't I do, you know, I'm not a lurker. I'm not dangerous. You all know me.
Yeah.
You know, everybody in the world knows my name.
And I guess that's part of it.
Like,
you kind of touched on it there. There's worries about safety and concern, obviously. And then there's also worries about, we get a lot of people that just automatically presume, thanks to transsexual porn or trans porn or whatever, tranny porn, they presume that, oh, well, all of you are very sexually active and, you know, pretty much kind of do it at the drop of a hat. And it's like, no, no, sorry.
I'm the old lady of GCAM, you know. I mean, I don't pose a threat to my cat.
Well, I'm trying.
But it was interesting because I knew this individual personally. Mm-hmm. And it was like, she just said, you're just,
okay.
At the time. Things have changed between us since then. I think she trusts me more or whatever, I don't know. But it was very interesting. I guess I've never been just literally put out of a group before. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of shock.
Opposite. I sent them to just about everybody.
There
you
go. You
know, exchange it with all kinds of groups. Yeah. And used to send one to Anise and Kathy and, you know, just various people around town and stuff that I knew of. But, in fact, actually some of them subscribed to Tats as well.
Yeah.
And plus advertised and some, you know, to me it was a good, you know, cross-pollination. We'd, you know, we could communicate to them what's going on in the trans community.
Kind of what I thought, you know,
and like everything. Like, but, yeah. I don't know. I guess, you know, maybe there were concerns with safety or, you know, individual's comfort, I guess, in the group.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it wasn't something you could argue, and I wouldn't have. I was just surprised.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little more open now these days.
I think so. Overall, I think the community kind of is continuing to evolve. As you know, as we evolved really from the groups into, you know, moving into politics and moving into, you know, other things, we started realizing that, you know, just being in a support group wasn't, you know, really enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we started looking and seeing, you know, the community and seeing, you know, where we were at that time, you know, financially and, you know, just kind of socioeconomically, sociopolitically, and realizing, wow, you know, we need this, we need that, why are we not, you know, progressing? And so that's when, you know, we started getting involved in a number of different things. Phyllis Fry, of course, was the big leader here locally,
right,
in Houston. And she actually had lost her job, I think it was 1977, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere around, it was in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And she had transitioned a little bit afterwards and decided, well, she, you know, she needed to figure out a way around this, because at that time, anybody who transitioned as a transsexual was violating the law here in Houston. They still had an anti-cross-dressing,
mm-hmm,
ordinance.
Yeah.
And there was one woman here in Houston by the name of Ann Mays who had transitioned and was virtually harassed almost, you know, out of the city by the Houston police. Every time she'd walk out the door, she was arrested. And they'd bring her into the jail, they'd release her, and as soon as she walked outside, they would arrest her again and literally bring her back in. I mean, it was, they tormented her.
Yeah,
openly, because they had the ordinance and they could do
it,
and they didn't care. And of course, she, you know, pitched a fit, and you know, was trying to do what she could, but you know, without any kind of background to actually get it changed. Phyllis was a degreed engineer. She went back for her law degree, and once she got her law degree, then she started she put out her shingle, and she also understood, you know, how the law worked. Was not intimidated by these people who said, oh, well, you know, it's law, and just, you know, deal with it. She fought back.
Kicking butt.
Yeah, exactly.
She did.
And she really was, you know, the modern-day precursor to a lot of the transgender political movement.
Mm-hmm.
There were others that were also kind of getting started in the late 70s and early 80s, but Phyllis really was the one who stood out, I guess, kind of heads and shoulders above,
sure,
a lot of the others nationally. And she started getting involved nationally after she got the ordinance overturned here in Houston. And once she started doing that, a lot of the others who were also involved in their, you know, localities, like Jane Fee up in Minnesota, Jessica Xavier in Maryland, and some of the others, Jamison Green out in California, they all started kind of coalescing and, you know, kind of communicating with each other and realizing that there was a need to, you know, start addressing things on a national level. It was about
like what?
Well, for instance, employment non-discrimination, and also inclusion in the hate crimes bill. We had other groups that were working on this, Human Rights Campaign.
The Human Rights Campaign, yeah.
They were the large group. NGLTF was as well, but they were pushing forward with legislation, but the legislation they were pushing forward was sexual orientation only. And, of course, you know, Phyllis Fry and a number of others had spoken with them, had flown up to Washington to, you know, have conferences with the Human Rights Campaign. This was all in the early 90s. And they were, unfortunately, not able to really kind of make any headway with them. They said, well, we understand your problem, but we're going forward with this, you know, in an incremental fashion, and, you know, you'll just have to wait. And, of course, that wasn't good enough for them, so they pushed back. And, of course, in a lot of ways, we're still kind of dealing with, I guess, not necessarily that in an overt fashion. We had some of that in 2007, but there's, I guess, still a lot of disparity between the the gay lesbian political leadership that was there and was established in the 80s, whereas the trans community kind of came in about a decade later and are still trying to kind of play catch up in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, we did manage to get a number of ordinances. Really, we didn't have all that much in... we had the very first ones in the 70s. Minneapolis, Minnesota was the first one. They passed a transgender inclusive one in 1975. I think Champaign, Illinois was the second one in 77 or 76, and Urbana, Illinois also at roughly about that same time.
So what did it say when they passed this legislation? What was the gist of it?
You want the language of the legislation?
Yeah, the essence.
The essence is that it was a non-discrimination ordinance that covered employment non-discrimination, and I believe probably in some of them housing, and I believe medical care in some of the others. But it varies from locality to locality. But generally, a non-discrimination ordinance. Dealing with employment is employment's kind of the primary issue that a lot of us deal with, and I'm still there now. But the community really started pushing for this pretty hard in the late 80s and the early 90s. And once we actually started getting involved at the state levels and the national level, then that kind of drew a lot of the attention from the rest of the community. Up until that point, really, a lot of the trans community wanted nothing to do with being out to exposing themselves to, you know, being actual figures, you know, that were making the news media and, you know, or whatever media, and trying to establish that, yes, we're here, we are a community, and we need, you know, rights. And a lot of... what was broken down in the 90s kind of came as a result of those few who were taking those stands in the early and mid-90s. In fact, actually, I still remember being a member of TATS here locally in 96 and 95. Well, not 95, 96. And at about that time was when Sarah DePalma, who was also another local activist who... was also another co-host on After Hours.
That's
many
right.
years ago. In fact, she was the very first one in the nation to host a transgender-oriented show here in Houston on After Hours. So she was another one of those history makers. But Sarah and Phyllis and the late Dee McKellar, these were three of the primary activists here in the Houston area, and they were also national-level activists as well. And had, you know, a lot of, I guess, notoriety or infamy, if you will, depending on which way you wanted to look at it, from others around the country. And they actually, at the time when I'd first joined TATS, were, I guess, kind of looked upon from the individual members that were attending the support groups as a bit of an anomaly. In fact, they were kind of objectified. I hate to say it, but they... everybody pretty much kind of went, oh, well, there's the activists, and, oh, I'm Phyllis Fry, and, you know, they would, you know, kind of make fun of them, in a sense, and I, you know, I didn't really make fun of them, but I listened to them and kind of like, oh, well, whatever, you know, and I never considered myself an activist, but what I needed was a name and gender change at that point in time, and I'd lost my job. And when Sarah DePalma had pretty much kind of officially tendered her resignation as executive director of It's Time America in 96, I kind of went to her and I said, no, you can't do this. You know, I need my name and gender change. I need that bill passed in the state. And she said, well, you're going to have to do it. And I said, no, you know, I can't.
You just kind of fell into that job, didn't you?
Well,
sure did.
Not by anything voluntary. I wanted nothing to do with politics. I'm half Native American. So growing up, my whole family background was, you know, you stay out of politics. You hated politics. You hated politicians.
Bad.
Exactly. The only time you voted was to vote them out of office. It was, you know, that was my whole approach to everything. And I wanted nothing to do with politics or activism. To me, it was the stereotype that we had growing up in the 70s of the 60s people out in the streets with the picket signs and riots and the whole bit. And so to me, I wanted absolutely, you know, nothing to do with any of that. And I had that image in my mind of, you know, what activism was. And I think really a lot of the folks in the support groups did as well.
So what changed your mind?
Well, what changed my wife? Yes, exactly. Necessity. Yeah. I needed it. Sarah resigned. And I actually went around to the support groups and was trying to talk with them about getting, you know, someone to kind of fill the void. And they all just kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, well, you know, not me.
And you want the void filled? Fill it
well,
yourself.
Exactly. And I didn't want to. I really had no desire whatsoever to do this. And it wasn't until I went home and was actually, well, not only depressed but pissed off that nobody was kind of stepping into the breach that I realized, well, I'm doing the same thing. So, you know, I'm getting mad at them for doing, you
for
know, essentially yeah, what I was doing. I wanted someone else to do it. So I jumped into it and didn't want to, and somehow or another, I guess I had good teachers. I went to Phyllis Fry's National Lobby Days in 1997, and that was the beginning of it. And I had other folks that had lobbied with her before, and they were the ones who kind of convinced me and said, yeah, you've got the chops. You're good at this. And I kind of went, no, I'm not. I was depressed after the first time I went up there. I found out some things. I just happened to be, I guess, in, I don't know if you'd call that the right place, but I was in, I guess, the critical place at the critical time and found out a couple different things. One was the end of vote that HRC was, you know, parading around in 1996. I found out that a lot of that was cosmetic. The Republicans switched six of their votes over to vote for it, and then Ben Nighthorse Campbell, who was going to vote for it, they made him vote against it. And it was all Trent Lott and all Republicans trying to, you know, ensure that they had everybody, you know, towing the party line, literally. And it was done specifically for that because the DOMA vote was a little bit earlier that year, and that failed miserably, and they knew the gay and lesbian community was pissed off. Number one, sorry. Well,
hey, the truth has to go over the air.
They were hacked.
Yeah.
And they also realized that elections were coming up, and they wanted the log cabin money. So they figured, okay, well, here's what we'll do.
Play the game.
You know, yeah, they tallied up the votes. They knew Mitch McConnell was going to be out of town, so they figured out, okay, well, we can actually do this and have a 50-49 vote and make it look like, you know, hey, look, we had six of our people vote for this, you know. I mean, we almost got it passed for you. And they, I mean, played it magnificently. And, of course, I went to Senator Bumpers is legislative director, and he pretty much kind of, you know, gave me the political reality in back of it, and I thought, oh my God, you're kidding. And he said, no, this is politics. You know, welcome to it. And, you know, they're there to get themselves reelected to continue doing the good work for their constituents. So that was, I guess, my entry into politics.
After
I hated
stepping
it.
Off point, yeah.
And it was very depressing, and I swore I was never going to go back up there again.
At what point did it start not being depressing?
Well, it didn't. It continued being
change.
Depressing. But I had a friend, well, actually, one of the people I lobbied with convinced me to go back up there not even 3 months later. And I was back up again in May doing the exact same thing, and again finding the same thing out, and again getting all, you know, pissed off. And it just...
It is a way of life after a while.
Well,
yeah.
Exactly. But it infuriated me. And then it started becoming, I guess, kind of a grudge type of thing. When you tick us off, all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's it, you know. You know, and I'm bound and determined. I'm a very resolute person when I dig in my heels. And this is...
It's the only way, yeah. It seems like that's the only way we can make inroads is to get mad.
You
know, mad enough to, you know... And
to actually...
It's a
you
shame.
Know, inspire you to action.
Yeah.
And over the years, enough other people also got involved for the very same reasons. And, I, you know, not only me, but others around the country were communicating and trying to, you know, pass a message and get a lot of people involved in politics. And over the years, it's actually, you know, paid off. We've had, especially in this decade, in the millennial decade, we have had more ordinances passed for gender identity than have passed for sexual orientation. We actually surpassed it and have really, you know, made great strides in our community, you know, in getting not only in cities but also states passed. We had, we had one that had passed in the 90s, which was Minnesota in 93. And since then, we've had the District of Columbia and 11 other states pass employment non-discrimination, and one other state that passed a hate crimes bill. Wow. So we've actually...
Baby steps,
but we're coming up close.
Because like Phyllis and Sarah and Dee, you were there close to the beginning when doors were slammed in your face and people...
Literally.
And politicians were laughing at you and you kept coming back. Yeah. And that hard work and all that frustration is now paying off.
True. It didn't really pay off for me, but it's
because you dug in your heels, it's paying off.
Well, it's kind of... It's ironic that, you know, the things that I had worked on for the most part, I mean... I did actually kind of help get the employee non-discrimination ordinance passed for the City of Houston employees, at least, you know, to get the gender identity included in it, and ran up there to Anise and said, well, you know, here's alternate language if you want to put it under sexual orientation, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess I was talking about 100 miles an hour, but she and Cicely just started writing stuff down. It was like, okay, yeah, good. Where? Minnesota? And I, you know, directed them to the website. But actually, I can say I worked on the first transgender inclusive code that was enacted both in Texas and in Florida. And both states at the time were Bush states, both Bush brothers. Yeah. So
that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, so that was kind of fun.
I'd be proud of that. Yeah.
And actually got the chance to, for the James Byrd hate crime bill, get our first Republican signed on, and he was the critical one. It was Warren Chisholm.
Wow.
I took Mark Wood and Patrick McIlvaine in with me. It was actually Equality Begins at Home. It was 1999. And I said, okay, well, come with me. You know, I've lobbied before. I'll show you how to do it. And I asked them, which one do you want to go to? I mean, you can go to Wolgamuth, we can go to Robert Talton, or we can go to Warren Chisholm. You know, let's go to a good one. They said Warren Chisholm, because I mean, he's the lightning rod that everyone always talks about. And actually, I will say one thing: Warren Chisholm is not as bad as a lot of people tend to make him out. I've actually not really had, you know, bad relations with him. He's enigmatic, and he's always, you know, putting forth all the ugliest bills. He's a lightning rod for the Republican Party in Texas. But he's actually at least, you know, a sensible guy. Well, maybe sensible is a little bit too strong of a word, but he's got, you know, a logic process to him. And that was what we appealed to when we went in there. I told, you know, both Mark and Patrick, what you need to do is, you know, just kind of watch how I do this. And he's going to brush back. Will you just keep asking the question and asking and re-asking in different ways to find out exactly what it is that his problem is, why he has an issue with this, and why he can't support it, and then, you know, try and counter that argument. And that's exactly what we did. And during the course of it, I found out that, well, he didn't want to support it because, you know, it said sexual orientation and gender identity, and I just, you know, I don't like that. That makes it sound like, you know, it's something that's natural. And I said, well, it is natural. He said, no, it's not. You know, I mean, they, you know, people choose to do this. You know, they choose their sexual partners and everything. And I said, you know, well, you know, and he said, sexual preference. And I said, well, what about intersex? My friend Jessica, remember Jessica Redmond? Jessica was in with me, and we talked about intersex in there with him, and of course that, you know, really made his eyes spin back. But I said, well, for instance, some of the trans community start off as intersexed, and that's not anything that's a choice. Well, what about that? Well, still, I mean, they're, you know, choosing not to conform based upon, you know, how they were born. And I said, okay, well, then let me ask you this. Would you accept the bill if it said sexual preference and gender nonconformity? And he sat there and he thought about it and went, well, yeah, I guess I could. And I was like, great. Okay. And then we got the hell out of there because I didn't want to give him any chance to change his mind.
Think about it.
And then I went over, I'll never forget this. Mark and I and Patrick went down to the cafeteria to get our next assignment from Diane Hardy Garcia. And, of course, again, I was talking 100 miles an hour and saying, Warren Chisholm will support. Warren Chisholm will support. But you've got to have the wording be this. You know, and I told her it needs to be sexual preference and needs to be gender nonconformity. But Warren Chisholm will sign on to this bill. And she just kind of looked at me like, oh, my God, what planet did you drop off of? You know, it was like the look on her face was like, you got to be out of your flipping mind. You were. And I thought, no, no, seriously. And I was trying to convince her, and she just kind of went, okay, okay. Well, she, at least to her credit, she took it back to Sinfronia Thompson. And Sinfronia was a good friend of Warren Chisholm. And she spoke with him, and he said, yeah, yeah, as long as the wording is this, you know. He just wanted to make sure the wording was such that it didn't make it look like something that was natural. And so they put it in there and, of course, added homosexuality, bisexuality, and heterosexuality and spelled it out. And it would have had transsexuality, but unfortunately that was Rodney Ellis that cut it out. And so at least I got it passed, but it didn't have us included. So I can, you know, claim a little bit of history, but,
again,
you know,
yeah,
it didn't work for me too well.
Well, I think they're going to start yelling at me in a few minutes. I think we have about 5 minutes left.
Five minutes?
No, we don't. We've got more time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we can just keep talking.
Perfect.
Then.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow, what a deal.
But actually, it's one of the things that I've learned over the course of the years. Just try not to let this stuff, I guess, intimidate you. One of the things that I learned in the very first office I went into was started off, and it was actually a supportive office, and I just fell on my face and thought, oh, my God, you know, well, not literally, but I went in there and stumbled all over myself and just, you know, thought, oh, my God, I did a horrible job, and I just, I thought, what the hell am I doing up here? That was the first time I went up with Phyllis in 97, and oddly enough, the very same legislative aide that sat there with us had stopped Phyllis in the hallway at some point, and then Phyllis said, I don't know who stopped in Senator Breaux's office, but I spoke with John Brizard, and he said they did a wonderful job, you know, and I thought, you're kidding, you know, there is no damn way. I was, you know, I was stumbling all over myself. I couldn't follow the script, and for me, I was not a script type of person anyway. I don't even speak. I can't write, you know, speeches and then speak off of the script. I've got to do it extemporaneously, otherwise it just doesn't work for me. But once it started, you know, flowing naturally, and once I understood, okay, well, this is what I need to do, and after about the end of that first day lobbying, all of a sudden I started, you know, watching others, watching how they did the parrying, if you will, the kind of point, counterpoint, and I started kind of doing the same thing and countering, you know, their arguments and then, you know, kind of fighting back. And then it got to the point where I was actually doing some of the offices solo, you know, my very first trip up to D.C. And I realized, wow, you know, I can do this, I guess. But it wasn't something that I like to do. I just, I really...
Well, you certainly seem like a natural for it. I mean, you did. I mean, I can remember the first time I ever met you. It was like, I have to speak to this woman. I've heard this name for 20 years, and now I have to actually face-to-face speak to this
I've
woman.
I've been around for 20 years. How did you do that?
You know. Well, I don't know how long I've been here, but it was a very long time, and it's like, I don't have anything to say. She's going to think I'm an idiot. You know?
I guess, so compared to like 10 years ago, has the nature of the battles changed? Are you fighting the same battles over and over just in different places, or have you found that the climate's changed a lot?
Yes and no. It has changed, and in some ways it's changed for the better, and in other ways it's kind of changed for the worse. Now it's kind of become more, whereas before we were all grassroots and we were doing this on a voluntary basis, now it's become big business.
Big business, yeah.
Rights are not really civil rights the way we think of it as far as a civil rights movement. Nowadays, rights are, you know, a way for people to make a paycheck, and it's also actually a good way for the people who work within those organizations to utilize that as kind of a launching point for further careers.
Oh, go on.
Well, I at some point need to stop at the restroom.
Yeah.
We need a break for a little bit.
We need the music.
Oh, that was great.
Yes.
We need a break.
I need a break because otherwise I'm going to, I don't want an accident here in the chair.
I feel like some music right
David
now.
David makes wonderful
music
coffee,
would be nice.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, he does. And it goes right there, yes.
Okay, Wes.
Three cups of it.
Wes is saving us.
Okay.
Thank you.
The earth could build. All right, and that was the Manhattan Transfer doing It Came Upon a Midnight Clear.
And they did such a fashionable
version of that.
Isn't it, though?
That was really pretty.
Yes, it was.
So. And boy, can they hold a note. I can remember the days I could do that. Oh, wow. All right. This is Judy Reeves and John Tiska. We're here with Vanessa Edwards Foster.
Mm-hmm.
See, I got it right again. That's three times tonight.
B-E-F.
All right. B-E-F. I never remembered my alphabet until Jimmy pointed that out. But we're here with GCAM, actually, this evening, and we're doing a little study on, a personal study on Vanessa and the trans history here in Houston and the United States, and even we've mentioned parts of the world. So, yep.
Houston's actually a little bit notable. We've had actually now four national leaders kind of come from here. One from the cross-dressing community, Jane Ellen Fairfax, Phyllis Fry. Phyllis Fry, who is executive director of ICLEP, the International Conference for Transgender Law and Employment Practice.
I'm so glad she said that. Okay.
Mm. And of course, Sarah DePalma, who is executive director of It's Time America, and I was one of the co-founders and
Vanessa,
president of National Transgender Advocacy Coalition. So.
All right.
So, for some reason or another, there's something in the water here in Houston. I guess it just...
Houston's where it's at.
I think it's great, yeah.
We've got a lot of fighting people down here. Everybody fights.
Sometimes you fight when you don't even know you're fighting and you don't really want to be, but you have to.
I didn't think I was fighting, but apparently I guess I was and didn't realize it. I guess it was bad enough. Robert Talton used to run from me, literally.
That could work.
Yeah.
All right.
It was actually kind of funny. I didn't realize it until we did a screening at the Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, and I was on the screening committee. Harold Dutton, one of our state representatives, said he was talking with us just kind of offhandedly afterwards, and he said, yeah, I'd even heard of, you know, Robert Talton and blah, 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 and somehow or another it the conversation got turned to Talton. He said, yeah, there's one person that this guy absolutely refuses to see. I don't know who that is. I said, oh, nice to meet you. Right next to you.
That works.
And it was, I don't know why, but he just, well, I do know why, actually. He didn't like the fact that I kind of figured out he was going to be quoting Bible scripture, so I started reading up on it and quoting him back and kind of fighting fire with fire, and he did not
never
like
challenge.
That.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Never challenge.
And he was not happy with that at all. Mm. He used to station DPS outside of his door every time it was any kind of GLBT lobbying. If he knew we were there, then, you know, we could not visit him, and the DPS refused to let us in there. I actually walked him back to his office one time from the chamber and said, well, I understood you were scared, so I just, you know, I wanted to make sure you made it back to your office okay. You know, just escorting you. And, of course, he, you know, started throwing one of his little, patented fits. It was actually kind of funny. He would literally kind of jump up and down like a little kid, you know, throwing
little
a tantrum.
Wow.
He literally did that outside of the cafeteria once, and I thought, oh my God, this is embarrassing.
What am I dealing with here?
Yeah, I chased him down the hallway one day. He saw me and took off kind of trotting, and so I trotted him back up, and he heard me trotting after him, and so he sped up and started running, and I started running after him, and I thought, what the hell am I doing? Everybody's looking.
That is
okay. That's it. You know, I'm just not going to deal with this. But
and that's what makes Vanessa one of the fabulous four in Houston. Okay.
I told you I was resolute.
So before you go, what's on your agenda right now? What are those things that are priorities here in Houston?
Here in Houston, actually, one of my priorities is to get a non-discrimination ordinance citywide passed, and I'm planning on doing that. In fact, actually, I'd begun doing it last year, had spoken with a number of the folks, and then, of course, the campaigns got started up, and I wasn't really planning on getting involved in the campaigns, but all of a sudden, lo and behold, it was like, shoot, I was shoved into the Obama campaign, kind of, you know, by circumstances. And I just kept pushing it along, and I didn't really think I was going to end up going to the National, and I ended up going to National again, so I got to be a delegate again. And
you just might as well resign yourself to these things.
Yeah, exactly. And then I got, you know, heavily involved in the campaign, went up to Dayton, Ohio. I actually spent the last 4 days of
I'm
the...
I'm sorry.
Well, I went up there for the for the last 4 days of the campaign until November 4th. So I was actually spent election night in Dayton, Ohio. And really, to be truthful with you, that was very exciting because Ohio was one of those critical states that mm-hmm. we had to win.
Right.
And it was the first critical state that actually came through for Obama. And on top of that, if you'll remember, Dayton, Ohio in 2004 was also very controversial because of the Bush recount or the Bush, mm-hmm. you know, ballot counting yes. up there, and they wouldn't let anyone in. So I thought, well, this is perfect. I get to go to Ground Zero, you know, the scene of the crime, as it were. And when they showed the results, and then they also showed the breakdowns by county. In Southwest Ohio, everything was red except for one county, Montgomery County, which was where Dayton was. That was blue. And to be there, you know, and realize, you know, we actually, you know, had a hand in turning that blue and, you know, tossed Ohio in the Obama camp. And also got another Democratic senator elected. So we were, you know, happy about that.
Two for
and,
two.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, that was actually a big thing for me. But nationally right now is, I guess, our big concern. We did pass the, I want to say James Byrd hate crimes bill, the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill in late October, I believe it was, or early November. I'm forgetting. It may have been early November. What had happened was we had been involved in this over the course of the years, had been pushing for inclusive language, and for the longest time we never were able to get it until just the last couple of sessions. We did get inclusive language introduced in the Senate last year, or last session, I should say, 2007, and it was stripped, unfortunately, in the Senate side. Well, this time we actually got it through in both the House and the Senate, and yep. I realized when I went to a lobby, I went up to inauguration, and I had actually another conference about 3 weeks after the president got inaugurated. So I stayed there in the 3 weeks and did all my lobbying with all the newbies, including all the new senators, because I realized this is our opportunity, and we actually got enough of them up there, so I knew that was going to pass. But the Employment Non-Discrimination Act is our big thing right now. And we did have enough votes to pass the House. At least that's what we were being told. And my concern was the Senate side, because I knew we did not have the votes there. And I've still got a few of them on the Democrat side that are not supporting employment non-discrimination and don't want transgender inclusion. And I'm, you know, still...
Does it freak them out? What's the hang up?
To be truthful with you, probably, maybe they're freaked out by it. For some of them, actually, Ted Kennedy was one of them for a good number of years. He absolutely refused.
Wow.
And they kind of grew up with the original lobbying around this. And this is where the Human Rights Campaign kind of came in, because they were the primary lobbying organization. And they were the ones who were kind of leading, you know, the messaging on this, telling people that, you know, we need to stick with this language. You're going to have other people coming in saying, well, we need gender identity in here too. Just listen to them and nod and say, okay, yes, yes. But, you know, we're going ahead with this because this is all we can get. This is realistically all we can pass. And they've been mentioning this over the course, well over a decade.
Yeah, forever.
And they did the same thing with the hate crimes bill, and it wasn't until just recently people realized that, no, actually we've got enough votes to actually pass it. And it passed in the House in the previous session, and the Senate, of course, you know, they didn't want to buy it. Well, this time, Ted Kennedy, actually, before he died, did actually make a public statement in support of it, and in support of employment non-discrimination, which, like, shocked me. He was one of the ones that I never understood why he would support everything except for us. And it wasn't until those the final days that he finally decided, okay, he's going to come out, you know, strong for a fully inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act and hate crimes bill. Mm-hmm. But there's still some others that were on, you know, that that original tack. And for, I guess, maybe some of the politicos up there, they get their mindset on something and they stick with it. And they're pretty much kind of rooted in it. There's a few of them, Pryor in Arkansas. Actually, one of the new ones, Kay Hagan in North Carolina, is another one that is not coming over for whatever reason.
They blame it on the voters.
Well,
my voters don't want me, and my constituents don't want this. It's like,
well, and
have you asked them?
Actually, another one that shocked me was Kaufman, and I kind of got a little ticked off with them. Kaufman is the one who took over for Joe Biden in Delaware. And there, it's not really so much the voters. His whole thing was pretty much, you know, we don't want to tackle anything controversial because we know there's going to be an election coming up here shortly. And, of course, we're not running, but we don't want to do anything to mess things up. And so we don't want to really extend ourselves. And I got a little bit hacked off with them. And, of course, you know, some of the others that are the absolute blue dogs, and like Pryor or Ben Nelson in Nebraska, they just absolutely refuse to do it because, well, you know, just because. And so, they're Democrats. So
if you had 3 minutes to say something to Houston and all of these people in Washington, what would it be? Because that's about what we have left.
We are a long, long way from getting everything done. I know everybody's talking about we've almost made it. We're, you know, reaching the point of being equal. In fact, I actually get a lot of brushback from some of the folks. Well, as you can tell, I do some protesting sometimes now. I've kind of gravitated into that, and thus, I guess, my T-shirt with the unequal sign on it. We've protested Human Rights Campaign a few times, and when I was in Provincetown the last time, I stood in front of their store and got a couple of pictures, and of course, the woman that was inside came out and started arguing with me and saying, no, we're all equals, and I told her, no, absolutely not. You know, I mean, I appreciate the fact that some of us are actually getting there, and trust me, I don't want to take away anything from anyone, but the problem is that we're not all there, and until we are all equal, we're not equal. And I'm going to continue, you know, pressing forward with this. I want egalite, not equality. Egalite works for me. Egalitarian.
Sarah DePalma bitched about that 15 years ago, and they have not changed.
Nope. They've actually marketed it much better. And well, they're great at marketing. Actually, the sad part is now NGLTF, who used to be very good on this, has kind of gravitated more towards the HRC position. In fact, really, not just them, but a lot of the organizations now are kind of gravitating more towards that and kind of focusing. In fact, actually, their focus has kind of gravitated away from employment and hate crimes and is moving, kind of migrating over to marriage. And so that's where the big focus is. And, of course, you know, for the trans community, we were always of a mind of, well, we can get married at any time, but we can't even work, you know. So how can we actually, you know, why are we focusing on marriage right now? Let's get us working. So ultimately, we still have a lot to do to get everybody on board and to get, you know, things passed to where we can get the everybody in the community fully working and fully insured. We've got the health care bill that's also kind of really screwing up, and we've got the hate crimes, and then after that we'll, you know, continue proceeding. But
so we'll all keep working on it.
Yep,
and
exactly.
And appreciate you being here tonight, and they gave us an extended hour, which I appreciate because you got to say more about it. But we will be having you back, I'm sure, at some point. After Hours is not going to forget anybody.
No, so I guess I can talk a little about Mary's too after.
And I think, yes, Chris is in there wanting to do his PSAs and his
station. Anyway.
And, well, Chris, I thought I saw Chris come in. Yeah. Oh, there he is. I knew he was here. He couldn't be far. Yeah. I'm here.
I'm planning on dirty Christmas songs.
Yeah, we're gonna have a few PSAs.
After your segment, we're gonna do dirty queer Christmas songs.
Yeah. We're gonna have a few PSAs, a couple clean Christmas songs. I think, didn't you say GCAM's got a couple of quick announcements?
Yeah, GCAM's coming back for a few minutes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then we're gonna transition into a little bit of dirty Christmas with Chris Harrison.
All right.
Queer radio with attitudes.
Yeah. Ooh.
So here's your PSAs.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about your apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name is Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, Call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites MySpace and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. On Facebook, for example, you can connect to KPFT as a friend, join our fan page, and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley to Facebook users. On MySpace, KPFT provides event videos, updates, and a lot more. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. On MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFT Houston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You are listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast. KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. I'm getting a little congestion in my lungs. I can't say it all in one breath.
Yeah. excuses. You can also find After Hours on Facebook. Go to After Hours. Just search for After Hours up in the upper right-hand corner.
And you'll be joining one of the 138 friends and friends we already have. I think I just added invited another 100 or so.
And something like that. So we're growing.
Give or take.
So, and also, and always remember, if you're one of those that does the Farmville and all that, After Hours is not going to be doing Farmville. So
we have a different way we want to do Farmville, and they don't allow us to do that.
Yeah. So we're going to be ignoring all those requests. But anyway, become a friend of After Hours on Facebook. I think we're going to do a quick Christmas song and then come back and do TV.
No, we're ready to go.
Oh, we're ready to go in there?
Okay. I said, shut up.
All right, if they're ready.
You told me you were playing music.
Well, no. There you go.
Okay. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi.
Joining us. How wonderful is this? Oh, you get your own mic and everything.
Wow.
Wow, I'm impressed. So, G-Cam spent a little time this week at Mary's.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. We talked about Mary's a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And how that you have been in contact with owners.
And yeah.
And there's been some salvage.
Some. Not a and lot, but some.
The problem is the daily break-ins.
And we've been kind of blaming it on the vagrants and the... Maybe some of the druggies and so on looking for a nice place to be warm.
And I'm sure they're part of it, yeah.
I personally have managed to chase someone off the property when mm-hmm. we were there. Now they're at a point where the police actually go in and clear the place out for them before they step foot in the property.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I were there with them the other day, Tuesday,
yes.
And worked for several hours. Unfortunately, there were many trophies and awards that were still on the wall on the shelf over the front window
mm-hmm.
and some other things that had been left there. And we actually went in to retrieve those and start the cleanup. When we got there, we realized that someone had broken in. And rather than just sleep there or steal whatever booze was left, etc., these people came in just with the idea of just destroying things.
Mm-hmm.
They tore up everything they could find, and what they couldn't reach, they threw things at. They tore up the Mary's stained glass
mm-hmm.
Piece that was hanging up close to the ceiling, etc. They destroyed the trophies. The glass was broken, and all of the awards and stuff that were there. That was just really, and you know, they left little calling cards like they urinated all over the back of the building, etc., etc. Inside, it was quite unpleasant to be in there. But as we were raking and shoveling up the stuff with work gloves and such on, and we won't talk about my perfect three-point landing outside the building. Oops, thank God it was outside, not inside. As we were raking up the back of the building, of course, all the light fixtures have been ripped out, too. There's just wires hanging everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we were working in the dark. You came across some writing on a wall.
Yep. Sure did.
And
sure
we did. Finally realized that it wasn't just the vagrants that were coming in, because vagrants don't usually have paint cans with them.
Yeah.
So, what did they put on the wall?
Teenagers.
No.
You know the exact wording. I know the words that were in it.
Yes. Basically, it was that they hate the fags.
Yeah.
And the big cross, you know, painted on the wall, too. And the other one was, we like you, but oh well. Which was kind of an ominous, scary kind of thing, if you really think about the meaning behind that. But so now we're not dealing so much with vagrants as we are with people who seem to hate the fags.
Yeah.
We like you, but oh well.
Uh-huh. It's just kind of like a weird little message. Huh. And again, you know, when you are standing there inch deep in glass and urine, back in that end of the building, yeah, you could read all kinds of things into that message. Huh. So we basically got everything of any import out of the bar. Most of it is in horrendous condition at this point. Some of the things we can salvage. Some of the things we'll have to try to put back together in order to salvage them.
Some of the trophies back together if we can.
Yeah, if we can find all the pieces and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was just a really sad end to some place that's been around nearly 40 years, 39 years. And there was a gentleman out there, and I won't mention any names or talk about it too much, but who wants to do a film documentary on Mary's, the history of Mary's. Mm. And so I mentioned this to the owners and said, well, you know, eventually they're going to want to come in with cameras, you know, and it's like, we'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
But that's okay. They're very cooperative. It actually is kind of a consortium. It's not just one person or whatever that owns the place, but they're the spokespeople that are here right now working with us. And
John, are you familiar with Mary's at all?
He missed that in his lifetime, and that is so sad.
I've heard references about
them. Have you
them.
Really?
Actually, my wife's been there.
Yes,
she used to work at the Children's Museum, and they a lot of her coworkers would hang out there.
Just oh, okay.
You know those museums.
Because in its 40-year history, it's 40 years ago, our community was not as politicized, not as congealed as it is now, not out at all. So Mary's was the bar most known across the United States. Somebody outside of Texas, if you say Houston, they'll say, oh, Mary's. That's what they know. Because it was the center of political activism at its very beginning. Then when the AIDS epidemic hit, it became the center for dissemination of information. And also because of the patio in the back, it became the resting place for a lot of people who died of the disease after they were cremated. So it represents a lot to gay Houstonians. In its last few years, it unfortunately
on a downhill slide.
Very much on the downhill slide with drug problems and hustler problems and that kind of thing that will kill a business, and it eventually did.
In the day, anybody could walk into that bar and be comfortable.
Yes.
Gay, straight.
Man, woman, leather, drag, you name it.
It was just home.
Yeah.
For so long.
Now, you said you were going to preserve some of the garden.
We're talking to the owners about this. Nothing has been settled. Nothing has been decided upon. Their goal at this point is to have a gay bar there again.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's a lot cleaner and nicer. Something that's not the last dregs of Mary's, but something that everyone feels welcome and comfortable in again.
Well, whoever does it is going to have to come in and start from scratch, because
well,
the only thing left
that.
Is the shell of the building.
Yeah, we've talked about that. But the building itself is sturdy and steady with its cinder block and all that. The problem is if people continue to break into it, and they've been saying this for the last several weeks to me, people continue to break into it, they're now destroying the building. And if it gets to a point where it's going to cost more to put it back together than it is to just plow it under and rebuild, then they'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hate to see that happen, because the house in the back of the property was built in 1916. And the people who lived in that house were the ones who opened the original bar there. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And who eventually leased the property to Jim Farmer.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people don't want the house destroyed. They don't want the bar destroyed. But, again, they can't put, you know, good money after bad every single day trying to put the building back together to make it safe. So it's kind of up to our community to either start watching the building and reporting whatever they might see there so that the police are taking care of it. There have been two arrests made. They do plan to prosecute.
Good.
Not because they're mean and ugly, but because it is their property. It is being systematically destroyed by people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very sad that as busy as that corner is, we should be able to take care of that building a little bit. It's a simple thing to dial 911 if you see somebody on a property or you see somebody destroying property or whatever. You would do it if you were at home. Why won't you do it if you're on that corner? You can't tell me that nobody at Chances has ever seen anybody over there.
I know.
Or the condos or whatever behind
you
the bar.
You would do it if it's
Burger King.
If you saw
places.
Something at your neighbor's next
exactly.
door.
Because the bottom line is these people start moving in and saying, oh, we hate the fags, and drawing big crosses on the wall. They're one step away from that 2x4 in their car.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something else. You can't let them move back into the neighborhood. You've got to start protecting your own. And if that's a hate crime against a building, and I'm not, you know, denying that, of course, people are more important. But the point is, if they start moving in and they get away with it, it's one step, you know, closer to hurting someone
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
So.
No, I thought the owners of the property, were they not going to turn that over to, I guess it was Pappas or something?
No. That, they, in fact, they're on that Mary's Facebook page, and they read it occasionally just for a good laugh. There's never, ever been any discussion of a barbecue place or
no.
or anything else.
Never.
It's just where people
someone
get this stuff.
That,
yeah.
I know. It just
yeah.
blows it up.
They
into.
They were going to plow the building under and, you know, sell it because the real estate was.
And that's the last thing the owners wanted to
do. Either.
This has been in their family for 100 years. They don't want to sell
no.
this property. They are not going to sell the property. They no. do not want to plow down the buildings. But
so it just needs someone.
Yeah, they've mm-hmm. had locksmiths in there. They've had people in there. They've had the back door replaced with a steel door. This is costing them money on a daily basis. They have chains the size of my fist.
I know
locks.
It.
They're huge.
Huge chains.
It takes 15 keys to get from the front door to the back property now. 15 keys.
Yeah.
We were actually in the flower shop the other day. It's the only place they haven't destroyed. And they,
and that's one room.
Yeah, that's one room. And the owners had actually put some stuff in that room, hopefully to protect it. And we actually cleaned all of that out to where the flower shop's basically empty now.
Mm-hmm.
So there
they,
is nothing of value in that bar anymore.
So are no. they actively looking for other lessees? Or what's the?
Actually, two people have approached them. That I think one of them wanted to open a sports bar and the other one wants to open a gay bar.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't made any plans. They haven't leased to anyone. They have to shore up the property first and get it into a situation where it is leasable. And so, you know, they're really, really nice people. They're cooperating. They're not gay. They're obviously extremely gay friendly. Mm-hmm. And speak fondly of Mr. Farmer.
Yes.
And, you know, things of that nature. They knew the gay and, can't think of the other name, the other couple who managed
gay and.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Cannot think of their names, but the other managers.
The owners after Fanny.
And, of course, obviously they know Michael Gates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Through business. And so, I mean, having had the property in the family for so long and having leased it for so long, et cetera, they know as much about Mary's history as anybody. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah. And
you think,
I hope at some
nice
point they'll come to After Hours and talk to us. Yeah,
know this gay community.
Like the back of their hand.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't want to say too much about them, but, you
not
know,
only that, but they revere it.
Oh, my God. Oh,
they
yes.
want this bar
oh,
to stay in the gay community. They
yeah.
want it to
so
be
why?
A gay bar.
Then I guess I don't understand why it hasn't had someone kind of step up earlier. And
because it was
right after it closed.
Well,
Well, because
it closed because it was in arrears on its lease.
Right.
And so that's not something you can do. I mean, you didn't make his payment on the lease this month. So you don't, you know, that takes time. It has to go through the courts. It has to go, you know, you have to take your steps legally to do something like that. By the time all that was done, I mean, they closed the bar one day. They bolted it down. And the plan was to start moving forward. They're not the only two people who have to make answers, so they have to deal with other people. Like I said, it's kind of a consortium, but, you know, not everybody's in Houston. And that was the other thing. They had no idea that it was being broken into on a daily basis until they started going over there. Now they go over there every day. But, you know, not without the police. And it's a shame that such a public corner can have that kind of behavior going on in it on a daily basis and nobody see anything. It's just, I find it hard to believe.
So somebody wants to help out. Can they call GCAM?
Yes, they can call GCAM at 713. Sorry, says I did this too fast. 713-692-8735. Somewhere between 11 a.m. and 4 a.m.
She's not kidding, folks.
We do not answer early morning phone calls, and if it accidentally gets answered, it's probably not going to be nice.
No, it won't be pretty.
Preferably after 11 in the morning. They can email. They can go to www.gcam.org, gcam.org, and email the curator, since I am the curator, and I'm the one who's working with the people at Mary's. So it'd be more logical to email me than anybody else. And, you know, anybody who wants to talk about it, has anything positive to say that might help the situation, or just wants to get their two cents in to see if maybe the owners can make some changes or do something a little differently, you know, we're open to suggestion. They prefer to stay anonymous right now.
Yeah.
They will be coming out to the community at some point in time, but right now they don't want to be bombarded by phone calls and emails and so on and so forth. So I'm basically the spokesperson, and they've allowed me to do this. And in fact, when Tim Brookover and I were on Channel 26 here recently, it was with their blessing. So that's pretty much, again, the phone number is 713-692-8735. And we're open for all kinds of suggestions.
Yeah,
somebody has photos, memorabilia in the private collection, want to bring it out?
If they would like to donate that or loan it to GCAM. Actually, GCAM is planning something early next year to kind of commemorate Mary's. We've got a piece of artwork that's being done, and we'll be unveiling that. And we have some other pieces of memorabilia that we have collected from the bar, that some are destroyed, some are not. We also had Fanny Farmer's brass plaque that they had put beneath the tree that they planted in his honor after he had passed away, which we also hope to have at the unveiling, not necessarily belonging to us, but on loan. Yeah, anybody who has any memorabilia from Mary's or pertaining to Mary's, we would love to have it, see it, scan it, whatever. Just know where it is.
Yeah. Can I make a suggestion?
That would be great. You may always make a suggestion.
I mean, I've been over to the MCC and seen the GCAM stuff that's hanging up over there. And with all the wonderful stuff y'all have and then what y'all are gathering from Mary's, I think it would be probably something beneficial for future generations, for as long as GCAM is wherever it's going to be housed, to have a Mary's Corner.
A Mary's Corner.
Mary's Corner.
Well, we are actually talking about a wall at this point, which would amount to a Mary's Corner.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be real honest here, and this is, the community's not going to want to hear this, but I have to be honest here. At this point in time, because of the break-in at Mary's, so many break-ins at Mary's, I would be almost afraid to put anything on the GCAM walls right this minute.
I don't fear
it would walk away.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
But we definitely are looking at something like that, and you know, it's 40 years of history. That.
Yeah, I mean, I know y'all have a few those little glass cases that y'all got some stuff in.
Sure.
Couldn't we get something to put some of that stuff in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm not discounting your suggestion. I agree with you.
Yeah, I understand you don't want to do it right away.
Yeah.
Because of what's going on right now, and it's a sad shame that there are people out there that are destroying a piece of our history.
Right.
Basically. But
glass cases are a good idea. We just need people to donate the money for them.
Yeah. They do not come cheap. They're beautiful.
I'll talk to you later about that part.
Well, okay.
Separately and off the air.
All right.
But I I've walked y'all's hall up there and seen, and I don't know how many of our listeners have actually gone up there and seen all that, but I've seen some really, really old and really neat stuff that I didn't know existed.
See, we've been collecting for 10 years, and that's just a pinpoint of what we have.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a very important piece of history that needs to be seen.
Yes, it is.
Because there's going to be future generations that aren't going to know about Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't exist anymore.
You're right.
I think that would be a good piece. Because they're going to hear about it from some of us older gays and lesbians. And they're going to be like, what the hell's Mary's?
That's right.
And it's going to be one of those things where you're going to say, like, you're going to grab them by the arm. You're going to say, come on. And you're going to run over to wherever G-Cam's housed at the time.
One of the...
It would just be so much better if we could, instead of not just G-Cam, but actually take them to Mary's to still be there.
Well, one of the...
Mary's is not coming back anymore.
No. Mary's is gone.
Yeah.
Mary's forever. Gone. But one of the odd things that we picked up, a framed poster at Mary's, we picked this up, a framed poster of the Venture Inn.
Oh, wow.
Why it was at Mary's, I have no idea.
Universe dropped it down just for us.
But, you know, the Venture Inn is another bar that's gone.
Amazing.
Went by the wayside of drugs, yeah.
Yes.
I saw somebody sometime last year with a Venture Inn
T-shirt. Yes. Mm-hmm. We've got quite a few of those.
Yeah, we have some.
Yes.
We actually even have Mary's T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah.
I've lived in Montrose for 20 years, for almost 20 years now, and
I hear him.
Will you pick a microphone?
They make me use one, girl. Get over it.
Like the spiders going on in the room. Anyhow, I've been in I've lived in Texas for 20 years, as of this June, and Mary's. As much as I hate bars in general, Mary's holds the history of being the first gay bar I ever walked into.
See?
It's true for a lot of people.
I was not completely out of the closet. I was obviously visible around the neighborhood, but at that time I wasn't. But it was I vividly, vividly remember one of my first times. First month or so I was in there. First couple of weeks I was in there. I was sitting on the bar, all huddled up, and I was not what you see today. No jewelry, and I was just huddled there in the corner. Mm-hmm. And this guy, who had a military nickname of some kind, you know, the colonel, the general, something or other.
Corporal
or something.
He
walked up to me, and his very first words to me, "What are you doing in a queer bar?"
Okay.
And I looked at him and I said, very quietly, "I'm queer." And he bought me a soda, and we started talking, and I started talking to other people at that bar and getting to know people, and it was like that first moment in my life where being queer was not weird, where being queer was okay, and, you know, there was more than just me, you know, and, you know, I don't wax sentimental about bars except for that, because... That was a pretty intense part of my life back then, because I would go back to where I was living at the time and be right back inside the closet.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It was only when I was walking around that area and being inside that place that I could be who I was. And and all of the characters that I knew there, many of whom are no longer here, including one guy who I've always described as Yosemite Sam in A Pair of Daisy Dukes.
Oh, yeah.
That's descriptive.
Yeah, that's exactly what he looked like to me back then. And he was, you haven't been hit on until you've been hit on by a man in his 50s with a Yosemite Sam mustache and wearing a pair of Daisy Dukes, most of which was missing. which was more him than material.
Yeah, well.
But he was the sweetest guy in the world, though. I mean, they all were very nice to me.
I think I have pictures of this guy.
You may.
I think I have pictures from back in the 70s and early 80s from Mary's, about 200, 300 of them.
Yeah, I moved to Texas in 90, so he was probably, yeah. And because it's the first place I was ever out, the first place I would live, that I could live my reality, this, you know, it holds that part of my heart. And I know, and I watched during those early, you know, the early 90s as faces disappeared from that bar, you know. And when they painted over the thing, the mural, and I realized that I, you know, those were faces of real people that they had painted over. Caricatures, maybe, but they were all real people at one point. And, you know, that just broke my heart.
And all they left was Mr. Balls on the wall. Yes. I never understood that.
They will.
Okay. Mr. Balls, the cat.
The cat.
The cat.
Yes. Actually, we have his death certificate.
Yes.
Mr. Balls, yes.
Wow.
It's one of the things we retrieved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which amazed me, but anyway, we won't go there.
Okay.
Anyhow, I'm just...
All right.
Okay.
There'll be more.
There'll be more.
Coming from Mary's.
For Mary's, and I really enjoyed the talk with Vanessa.
Fabulous.
And it also just galvanized me and made me feel like, you know, okay, the gay and the lesbian communities are politicized. Now the transgender community is politicized. When is it time for the bisexuals? When are they going to get politicized and get rights? Especially considering there's probably more bisexuals than any other orientation.
I think, for the most part, they get rights. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there's kind of... No,
actually... They're kind of coming along with sexual orientation.
Well, as long as they're doing the opposite sex thing. But so many bisexuals are closeted because they're afraid of losing a marriage, children...
Mm-hmm.
There's
not as much visibility.
No, there's no visibility. That's part of the problem. There are no bi bars. There are no bi venues for people.
And there's too many people who think that bis are just the people who couldn't make up their mind yet.
When you see a man and a woman walking down the street, you assume that they're straight.
Mm-hmm.
When you see two men
people are confused about us
walking down the street. You assume that they're gay.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is no visible way
to tell if someone is bi.
Yeah. Because,
there's a presumption of one or the other.
I always lament that we talk about the GLBT community, but we just give lip service to the Bs.
And always...
My rant for the evening.
For them.
Yeah.
Well, I was pushing for their visibility and their activity.
I know.
And they were, I guess, in the late 90s, and then all of a sudden things just kind of sort of fizzled.
They tried, and it didn't work, and so they're back to square one again. Okay. My rant for the evening.
Okay. I'm so happy you got to rant. You got to rant, and he got to reminisce, and she got to teach us history, and John got a whole new education.
Oh, you
did, though.
I'm so glad you came. Actually, he not only came, he brought me.
Thank you.
Bring him back again.
Next month?
Okay.
That works.
How about a little bit of a Christmas interlude?
An interlude before we get to the dirty Christmas carols?
Yeah, a little bit of that.
So this is a clean interlude?
This is a clean interlude. Then we'll have some dirty Christmas. And how about some round table tonight?
Okay.
All right, then.
Guess that puts me up.
So up next, we're going to have Inner Voices.
Ah.
Caroling, caroling, now we go. Christmas bells are ringing.
caroling, caroling through the snow. Christmas bells are ringing, joyous voices sweet and clear. Sing the Santa heart to cheer. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling through the town, Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling up and down, Christmas bells are ringing. Mark ye well the song we sing, gladsome tidings now we bring. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling near and far, Christmas bells are ringing. Following, following yonder star, Christmas bells are ringing. Sing we all this happy morn, lo, the King of Heaven is born. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing.
Dave Hall, whence comes this rush of wings? When I say we're going live, that means the mics are going live. Alrighty. I know people out there enjoy the traditional kind of Christmas songs that Wes plays. Sometimes. He's threatening to play all choral music next week, but yeah, I decided we need to play some dirty songs. We need to play the naughty Christmas songs you're not going to hear elsewhere. As I turn up my mic a little bit more. So, God, my voice is finally breaking. That's what we're going to do. We're going to start off here with the traditional song here on After Hours. Fortunately, we used to have a copy that had a personalized greeting for us. And that's kind of gone by the wayside. And but we're going to play that now instead. It's Pansy Division, Homo Christmas. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. This is the kind of Christmas you don't hear elsewhere.
I wanna be a
really bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. You're an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You have got to get your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. Soul is an appalling dump heap overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable, mangled in tangled up knots. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. You know, given the choice between the two, I take the seasick crocodile. You know, as he ate me, Mr. Grinch, with a super nauseous nose. You're a crooked turkey jerky and you drive a crooked horse, Mr. Grinch. You're a three-decker sauerkraut and toadstool sandwich with arsenic sauce. You're a mean one, you're a monster, you're a vile one, cause you're a runner. You know, as he ate me, you're a foul one, you're a snake, and you're a sly one. Three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
Try.
I bet I'm out of doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He's making a list, measures it twice. Gonna find out whose penis he likes. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He's older than your grandpa. He's got more money than hair. If you'd like me to describe him, think a wrinkled or rotten pear. So you better watch out. You better not try. Not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He smiles and shows his dentures. He tosses you a wink. Makes no suggestive gestures. And informs he's into kink. So you better watch. You better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. Here he comes. You better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He bugs you when you're drinking. He'll quit if you don't partake. Sometimes he's so relentless, so just leave for goodness sake. You better watch out. You better not try. You better not doubt. I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming. A chicken hawk is coming. Chicken Hawk is coming to town.
Show up right after dark.
are the girls I love even more than I usually do. And although it's been said I may never be wed, I promise you I'll be your home for Christmas. You can count on me. We'll stand below the mistletoe and share.
I'll be a homo for Christmas and Easter and Labor Day. You can really count on me. Not homo sapien, not homo erectus, but homosexual.
We'll stand below the mistletoe and share.
My true love gave to me a man in some really tight jeans. On the second day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
two stiletto pumps
and a man in some really tight jeans. On the third day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
three French bags, two stiletto pumps
and a man in some really tight jeans. On the fourth day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
four little whips,
three French
fries, just a little punch,
and a man in some really tight jeans. On the fifth day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
five big cars.
A man in some really tight jeans. On the sixth day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
six bodybuilders,
five big hot rings, four leather whips,
three French fries,
just a little punch,
and a man in some really tight jeans. On the seventh day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
seven prima dresses,
six bodybuilders,
five big hot rings,
four leather whips,
three French fries,
just a little punch, and a man in some really tight jeans. On the eighth day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me
eight rad cowboys,
seven prima
dresses.
Six bodybuilders.
Five big God rings.
Four leather wears. Three French men.
And a man in some really tight jeans. On the ninth day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me.
Nine bottoms screaming.
Six bodybuilders.
Five big God rings.
Four leather wears.
Three French men.
Just a leather pearl.
And a man in some really tight jeans. On the tenth day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me.
Candles, cups, and soldiers.
Nine bottoms screaming.
Eight
red
cowboys.
Seven kamikazes.
Six bodybuilders.
Five big God rings.
And a man in some really tight jeans. On the 11th day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me.
11 Ken dolls.
10 cops and soldiers.
9 bottoms screaming.
Bad cowboys.
7
comma
dresses. 6 bodybuilders.
5 big God rings.
4 leather wears.
3 French bags.
And a man in some really tight jeans. On the 12th day of gay Christmas, my true love gave to me.
12 luciers.
11 Ken dolls.
10 cops and soldiers.
9 bottoms screaming.
Rad cowboys.
7 drama dresses.
6 bodybuilders.
5 big God rings.
4 leather wigs.
4 French men.
Just a red of tongue.
And a man in some really tight jeans. And a man in some really tight jeans.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
Mayor, the Council on American-Islamic Relations is here to serve you. CARE Houston has a wide variety of pamphlets and workshops on Muslim religious practices for every type of group, from churches and synagogues to schools and law enforcement, and even corporations and city councils. CARE also covers civil rights issues in the Houston community and puts forward helpful publications in an effort to inform the public about their legal rights as Americans and immigrants. Socrates once said, "The only good is knowledge, and the only evil is ignorance." So if you wish to know more about CARE services, feel free to contact us at 713-838-CAIR. That's 713-838-2247. Or you can also visit us on the web at www.cairhouston.org.
Hello, this is KPFT's 90.1 Houston. And I'm Deloitte Parker, Executive Director of SHAPE Community Center. SHAPE, shaping history for the future. For over 33 years now, SHAPE has shaped history by actively working with issues important to all of us. The freeing of Nelson Mandela. The freeing of Clarence Brantley, death row inmate. The conviction and firing of the officers that killed Ida Delaney and Byron Gillen. Voter mobilization, anti-death penalty, police brutality cases, nutrition programs, legal clinics, cultural programs, all of these programs working to make life better for all of us today, for tomorrow. For more information about SHAPE, call 713-521-0629. SHAPE Community Center, 713-521-0629. Thank you.
PSAs?
Yeah, I had 30 minutes. I was told I was given 30 minutes. I did the PSAs.
So I heard.
It's nice to hear y'all were listening.
Well, hello. So what did we hear?
Oh, God, I gotta find the list.
There's a whole list under here.
Ta-da. Whoa.
Well, you played a lot.
Yeah, I got in 7 songs.
Cool.
Yeah, not finished. I started off by telling people.
Oh, okay.
We're on the air.
Before the change in music. We've heard Inner Voices of Caroling, and Dave Hall, Whence Comes This Rush of Wings.
That's pretty.
And then we went into Pansy Division, Homo Christmas.
Aha!
Temptress, the Grinch song, which I told them in the show before, so they had Mr. Grinch playing, spinning records. But I said, we've got a punk rock version of the Grinch.
We do.
And that's what we played, was Temptress. With a Grinch song, and a bunch of Go-Go Boys, Boys to the World.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Dedication to Me was Chicken Hawk is Coming to Town.
Oh, my. Mm.
Self-dedication.
Dedication to Jimmy, What Price Glory.
Where?
That's one with the refrain of Glory.
Yeah. Glory
Hole, not Glory Hole.
Yeah.
Not Hole.
Yeah.
I'll Be a Homo for Christmas by Venus Envy.
Ah, good.
Go-Go Boys, The 12 Gays of Christmas. And Temptress with White Christmas.
Oh, we didn't do Rhonda the Lesbo Reindeer?
I ran out of time.
But
I did get, I
did notice one thing. There wasn't a Dedication to Me in there.
No, I noticed.
We Three Queers?
We Three Queers of Orient R.
We Three Queers of Spring.
What's their version of that?
As he looks.
As he looks, yeah.
Because they did a lot of this. That's Hark the Herald. Came Upon a Midnight Queer. No, they didn't do a 3,
That one doesn't even necessarily have to happen at Christmas.
No, that's true.
That's a year-round... heartwarming song.
Yeah, heartwarming.
Oh, well.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't do walking around in women's underwear, did we?
Oh, we did. No, because I was picking the music, and I picked music you're not going to hear on other shows.
Because you're going to hear that on J.D. Doyle's segment next
You'll hear that
Monday.
Crap on Sonny.
Well, you probably will.
And you actually had him play the first week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
because
that's right.
Because we had snow, so you decided, let's start with walking around in women's underwear.
But you have to play that on heterosexual radio as well, because there are so many heterosexual men that enjoy walking around in women's underwear.
Most of the guys walking around in women's underwear are heterosexual.
Exactly, yes.
Which does bring me to the point that a very dear, sweet friend of mine, who has been having a rough couple of weeks, did once walk in on her brother singing that song.
Oh! Hello.
And she looks at him and said, "Something you want to tell me?" And he looks at her like, "No."
Only if he was actually performing it while walking around.
I see.
Well, it is funny. I mean, it really is funny.
So. Yeah, but it's just, it's so commercialized.
It is now.
Sure. It is now.
When we first started playing it, nobody else was, but that was years ago.
Mm. And that's part of the reason why, when it was played the first week that we started doing Christmas,
mm-hmm.
I cringed, and it's like, let's play the stuff you don't hear. And so that's what I try and do.
Well, you did.
Okay.
You did.
And you succeeded.
Yeah. And I'm still checking my pulse there about that choral music for next week. Yeah.
Careful. Careful.
We'll have an override on you.
It's going to be all
Chris
choral.
Already had an override this week.
No.
It's going to be all choral music next week.
Or a ride over.
Let's check. Nope, there's still a pulse in my veins.
So. Are you sure? Wait, hold on. We need to get Chris's car towed again.
Oh, wait, no.
Choral music.
You know,
it's roundtable time, isn't it?
Yes, it is actually.
I'm sorry. Everybody seems to be talking.
Okay.
Well, I'm just trying to find. I'm trying to find more of the information on this one story that I actually read a bit of it on last Saturday when we were getting ready for stuff for mm-hmm. the show, mm-hmm. and didn't see that there was a gay angle to it.
Oh.
And very interesting.
Are we going to talk about that one that I sent you?
Oh, yeah. I can't pull that email.
Yeah.
I've got it in my email.
Okay. We'll do that. An interesting... sorry, this one's a little week old, so I'm just going to throw this out real quick here. A 23-year-old man stuffed a baggie full of pot in his mouth during his arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he was caught... domestic violence in accused of domestic violence at a motel area where supposedly he got into an argument with his girlfriend. As the police arrived, he ran away from them and was trying to hide this pot.
Yeah.
Now, the two parts of this that are interesting is the police department had a camera crew with them.
Oh.
For the entire thing, for a cops spin off, a cops rip
reality
off
show,
on
yeah.
True TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now the gay angle on this is this guy did gay for pay movies.
Oh.
See, they made a couple different movies, and some of them, Earls didn't mention that.
Mm.
But the twisted part about it is because this was a reality show, they basically have his death on camera.
What? Did he die?
Did he asphyxiate it?
He stuffed it into his mouth.
That's what I thought.
It went too far in.
Yep.
Oh wow!
And they've showed the video. You can get it online. You can see it where he's saying, "I'm choking." And as soon as they realize that he's choking, they try and give him the Heimlich maneuver and get it out.
Jay.
And does not succeed.
Oh no!
And so they have this, and you can see it on the video. And this is it is a little disturbing to see this. That seeing this guy. accidentally kills himself because he...
For a baggie of pot.
Yeah.
Jay.
Gee whiz.
And that, so...
That is sad.
Wow. You know, it's...
Johnny!
And like I said, it's a... The queer angle to it of being a gay-for-pay porn star who was in this. Like I said, until he performed... I'm trying to find the Toller Road article, which actually mentioned what... where he what he performed on, but I haven't come across that article again. Unfortunately, they only show about a week, a couple days worth.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into archive, and it's harder to...
It seems like there's a real tasteless joke in there, something about Deep Throat, but...
I don't think they aired it.
Yeah.
They haven't said anything about airing it on television, but the video is available on the internet. Mm-hmm. Because it was... now, the way I saw the video was on the Toll Road site. That was a link to a local television station that showed that news story on that. So...
And this guy was gay for pay.
He was gay for pay. His real name was Andrew Grande. And for some reason, he decided he had to change it for gay porn.
imagine that.
And what did he change it to?
Rod Grande.
What?
That's the thing, is it doesn't...
You're kidding.
No, I made that up.
Oh my God. You know, there was that porn star named Max Grand, but... But there's really something Joseph in there, Small. Too, about just sort of everything being filmed.
Peter Small.
And everything ending up, everything ending up as a performance on some kind of TV, and it's making money for whatever. I don't know. It's just way skewed.
Dustin Michaels is his stage name.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Michaels. I forget why they said what movie, what studio he worked for, but there's nothing. Nothing coming up, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's just gruesome.
And like I said, the fact that you can see that stuff online, you know, it's...
That is kind of disturbing.
One of those broke boys who are pretending to be straight. You know,
broke
websites.
Well, I'm not sure if the CBS website is going to tell them...
CBS did name him a gay porn star, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, also he was. Part of what may have been the effect of why he choked on the marijuana bag. He's also tasered.
Oh,
yeah.
That'll do it.
He appeared on Broke Straight Boys and Naked Combat, as long as he also had a XTube channel, which has been deleted since then.
Cool. I wonder if you did any sword swallowing.
One of my favorite porn stars has a
blog. Evidently not enough.
I think you just put into electroshock.
No, like I said, he was running from the police. They tasered him. They removed the taser's probes from him almost immediately. But he still, like I said, I guess from the involuntary reaction from that, choked it down further where it couldn't be dislodged easier.
Was it really worth the dime bag?
It's just a very sad story from beginning to end. I mean, starting with the domestic violence.
Well, I don't think it was much. I'm not sure if it was the violence. There was a disturbance, and I don't think they ever got that cleared away. What happened?
Yeah.
Follow up a story we did last week about a possible hate crimes in Terlinga, Texas. Where an 18-year-old high school student whose name is being withheld was kidnapped and repeatedly sexually assaulted by two men before his car was set on fire. It's still unclear whether the victim was gay. However, the FBI are now investigating the horrific incident as an allegation as a sexual orientation as a motivating factor.
Gee. Mm. I mean, to me, the interesting question would be, do the men who sexually assaulted this person think of themselves as heterosexual in terms of doing such a thing?
Well, depending on what I'm trying to remember exactly what all.
I mean, that depends on the motivation for the crime.
Exactly.
Yeah, the two men were indicted on Wednesday with grand jury on charges of aggravated sexual assault, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated robbery, and arson.
Ooh.
Did this kid survive?
Yes.
Okay. Mm. So they didn't burn him, they just burned the car. Well, that's a little bit of a silver lining.
Yeah, to the complete story of what happened here is...
Tiny, yes.
There was assaulted outside of a bar, kidnapped and driven his own vehicle to a remote location where he was sexually assaulted. Victim's car was set on fire. Then the victim was taken to another location, a private residence in which he was again sexually assaulted. The victim escaped from the home and ran approximately 3 miles through the desert where police found him.
I would really be interested in terms of what
how the guys who did that to him think of their sexual orientation. I mean, it's still assault and everything, yeah. But if it's a hate crime, it seems to be that they don't think of themselves as gay, even though it seems pretty gay thing to be doing.
By the way, in case you're wondering where Terralinga is, basically it's on
M-B-F-E.
That... M-B-F-E. Yeah, well, it's on that little nipple. The extra nipple in the end on the west side of Texas.
Yeah.
Where it goes down for that first bump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The mini recession before it gets to the long recession at the end of the
year. Yeah, there you go.
Basically, basically, not far from the border.
Yeah.
So.
BFE West Texas.
We'll keep an eye out on that story as that develops. Cause that's
Yeah, I'd be curious about, you know, more of the story there.
Robert Downey Jr. was on the David Letterman show and was being asked about potential gay undertones of the new Sherlock Holmes film on Wednesday. Robert Downey Jr. and Paul Schaefer referred to gays as homos and screamers, while Letterman appeared uncomfortable.
I mean, I cannot remember ever a time of him he being particularly blatantly homophobic, and I think he's even sort of had gay guests and everything.
Yeah. Downey Jr.'s homo lines got a big laugh from the audience, so Schaefer saw an opportunity to get in on the gag, which seems very strange since
he's such a queen.
Well, no, that he wrote what's considered one of the gay anthems of "It's Raining Men."
Right. Yeah that's, I don't mean he's a queen, but he's very effeminate.
Just for the record, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, you know, all those movies he made when he was young and pretty.
Shortly thereafter, Downey Jr. reminds audiences that many butch homosexuals do, in fact, exist. In fact, I'm proud to know certain of them.
Ooh.
Oh, how nice.
No, well, he said a lot of really nice... I mean, he's I've read quite a few interviews because I do like him. I think he's an excellent actor. And he, you know, they've asked him, because there's been persistent rumors that he's gay. And he generally sort of says, if I was gay, I would be out. I would be out, right. And I would be really, you know, okay with it all.
Right, sure.
And I think that, you know, I think there's
I think
probably some
come
truth
out
to that.
Of the closet when he was 20.
You know.
Maybe he wouldn't have had 20 years of being a complete screw up.
Oh, I think there.
Every 5 seconds.
I've known a lot of heterosexual addicts who were just as addicted and messed up, and didn't have any.
Well, I know that,
you know,
but
yeah. Well, I mean,
I've known heterosexual addicts too. I just happen to think there's. I've been, you know, we've all been watching Robert Downey Jr. for the better part of 25 years now.
In that downward spiral, you know.
In a downward spiral.
People in glass pipes shouldn't be throwing stones.
Exactly.
The part that I do question in terms of his explanation of it is I think he says that he's never had sex with a man. That I find hard to believe. I do believe he's heterosexual. But the whole idea of, you know, coming up in the time in L.A. when he did come up, it was pretty hard not to have some kind of gay experience.
He was stoned and woke up in little kids' beds that he broke into their houses. I'm pretty sure once or twice he took one.
I don't know.
He gave one. I think he probably took one or two.
Yeah, well, probably, yeah. But still, possibly. I don't think that necessarily makes you gay.
I know somebody really well who's gay and has never had sex with a man.
Yeah, exactly.
But
well,
he is gay.
I know. Well, I know. I know. But I don't know. He's
just saying.
I can't believe I forgot.
There are heterosexual actors.
Can't forget who? What?
I can't believe I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the show.
What?
What?
This is what?
News update on the John Vice parole hearing. Denied.
Wow.
A parole board in Huntsville, Texas, has denied John Vice's parole for the fifth time in connection with his role for the 1991 murder of gay Houston banker Paul Broussard. Vice was convicted in 1992 for stabbing Broussard several times outside the Houston gay nightclub Heaven, which is not true. It was around the several blocks away from Heaven. I love revisionist history.
Yeah.
And was sentenced to 45 years in prison. He's only served 17 years of his sentence.
How many years in prison?
45.
Ooh, okay.
Fox 26 News has learned that the convicted killer may be granted parole in little more than a year from now.
But I thought it was denied.
It was denied, but supposedly it's coming up again.
Whoa.
You know, like, yeah. You know,
they squeaky give wheels. Them a shot once a year.
Once every 2 years or so, but you know.
Yeah. My sister-in-law, who teaches art, taught art school up in the Woodlands at the time, knew a lot of those kids and knew a lot of the families and everything, and you know, they're not monsters. I mean, they absolutely did something completely wrong, but they aren't black and white monsters.
Hmm.
They really, you know, were very messed up kids. You know, and that doesn't, I mean, in terms of, yeah, he deserves his sentence. But they're not monsters.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, but, you know, when you start using mitigating factors, saying, you know, they were drunk.
I'm not saying he should be out of jail.
Pot, you know.
But I think it really, you know, there's always lessons that, you know, I think the whole, it's horrible that he died.
Yeah.
It opened a lot of eyes up in the Woodlands. It really made people look around and see the damage that homophobia does. This very casual, just like, you know, fag joke kind of homophobia in a high school, in the high school setting. I think it opened up a lot of people's eyes to how what that can lead to.
I think
there was an educational side to the whole horrible thing.
I think unfortunately, there have had to be these kind of events, but they have a tendency to shine a light on people who don't necessarily want to have a light shone on them. How many, you know, Shepherd? I mean, there were a whole bunch of people there who, you know, I'm sure there were plenty of people there who didn't want to have their faces on TV, who ended up, you know, with camera crews and people all up in their business. And some of them, I'm sure, to this day, are still lost in their stupidity. And there's a whole bunch of people who got the message that, yeah, maybe we are doing something wrong here. Maybe our thought process about this is wrong. And maybe we should try to change things, you know?
Yeah, and like, I think part of the lesson is that they're in jail. You know,
well,
that there are
one,
that,
one well, out of the one ten. Out,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's making buddies.
But you know, I mean, the thing is that, I mean, we've talked about this story. We've covered it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm pulling up a website now that I know Jimmy's going to freak when he sees it there, but. I wanted to get the quote of this because when you threw out Matthew Shepard's name,
I'm kidding. He's cringing now. I can see him cringing now
in anticipation.
Well, you've already read it because I posted it on LSA. Come on, pull up your crap. No, I don't want pick it scheduled. What I want, because when you mentioned Matthew Shepard and all that, I suddenly remembered Fred Phelps.
Mm-hmm.
And
your favorite hero,
someone of his clan.
Punching bag.
Oh, he's making he added a stop in Houston.
Oh,
he's added a couple. Fred Phelps is supposedly coming here to Fred Phelps and gang is coming to Houston on January 3rd. They will be from 8 to 9 a.m. at the Co-Cathedral of the Sacred Heart.
Ooh.
Then they'll be going from 9:30 to 11 over at Lakewood Church.
Why?
Well, you just tell me you mean outside of both of those buildings.
Yeah, they'll be protesting. Lakewood Church, Joel and Victoria hate you, God does. we're
oh,
back.
Gosh.
Obama really loves these lying, puffy, nothing to say, money-grubbing, lying, false prophets. In fact, they all learn to speak from the same rule book. Therefore, on this glorious occasion for robust public speaking to this evil nation that hates God, the Westboro Baptist Church will be preaching at the Lakewood Megachurch, whorehouse of the demagogue, lying, false prophet Joel Osteen, where he spouts lies to freaks with checkbooks and cash who loves the lies they are told and are heading for hell. That was the first period.
Holy
okay. Since Obama.
Well, no.
Okay. Well, while part of what he said might be true about these people, then still.
Let's see.
Who died in the Fred Phelps God?
You kidding me? He's as old as God. Joel Osteen is the perfect example of how a preacher isn't serving God. He's a reprobate in a robe. He doesn't wear a robe.
Providing he wears sound a suit.
Preaching.
Yeah.
He wears a suit. He needs to get dressed in a closet until he got his new building.
You know, he it might mean that Fred is kind of realizing that people are bored with hearing him yell about gay people.
Later on the day, he'll be protesting at the Holocaust Museum. Yeah, he's on an anti-Jew thing.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, another one.
Oh, then he's going to be at the Jewish Community Center.
Well, he's just hitting all over Houston that one day.
Well, because he... And then Congregation Beth Yesharon. And then following that up... Well,
he'll be back on the
January 4th. they'll be at the Emily Weiner Jewish School.
Interesting.
You know...
That's New Hampshire.
He's really sort of broadening
There's another Houston.
Anti-Defamation League.
He's broadening his hate.
Man, well, he's been on a kick lately for God hates Jews.
One of my favorite versions of A Christmas Carol is a musical version
City Council.
With Albert Finney, where a character, during the scene with the Ghost of Christmas Future, one of the characters is dancing on Scrooge's coffin, singing, "Thank you very much, thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done." I'd love to do that someday on Fred Phelps.
Well, yes. at the 93 GLBT march in Washington, I got to blow kisses to Fred and his followers as we marched past their signs and their stuff. So,
well, here's the one.
So I got to personally send him love.
Well, hopefully they send his grandson Isaac.
There you go. Yeah, true.
Here's the one that I posted to the LSA, Lone Star Activist website. January 4th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., he will be at the Houston City Council. God hates fags and their enablers. Houston is bragging about being the first city in the doomed America to elect a dyke as their mayor. She spent the whole campaign claiming her sexual orientation had nothing whatsoever to do with why she was running.
And it didn't.
The nanosecond she was deemed the mayor-elect, what comes slithering out of her mouth? Yeah, I'm the first dyke. Yeah, I hate God. I hate my neighbors. And did you meet my significant other, Kathy, old mother Hubbard?
She didn't
Did you meet our three artificially manufactured children?
Artificially manufactured?
I didn't realize they were adopted.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I mean, you need. Yeah.
Oh, Fred, don't need research, does he?
I'm so faggy, I can't even think straight. Did I mention I'm a dyke? All humor aside, you've
when
been.
You get funny, we'll tell you.
I
haven't got there
it's
yet.
Paul. Also, make sure there's a parking space out there, please. Also, humor aside, you've been kicking God in the shins for decades now, Houston. God will shortly visit you. Can you say Galveston? Wait for it. But in the meantime, Westboro Baptist Church will be on hand to remind you of the great sin you've committed here. Isaiah 3:11, woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him, and the reward for his hand shall be given him, and all other sorts of...
I actually have a little aside from that evening that I'd like to share, which is that one of the women who was plainly visible on the set... on the stage that night, is someone that I know is not a close friend, but is somewhat of a friend, and she's a fellow meditator, and there's these different levels of meditation training that I couldn't afford, and I couldn't afford the travel, and at about 2 or 3 years ago, she and her lover had redone, or her partner had redone a house. And made a good bit of money on it, and just out of a clear blue sky, she said, "I'd like to send you to this meditation retreat." And this is up in Nova Scotia, and with all the flight expense and all the travel expense included, so I personally know that there was a very generous, good-hearted woman that was standing there on that platform. With them, rather than some bigot who was a hater. So, it just did my heart really good to know that there was this wonderful, generous meditator standing up on the platform with the family group.
Well, the universe has to balance out somehow.
Yeah.
Okay, what else we have?
The BBC got in a little bit of trouble. They did one of their little online polls asking people their opinions. And they wanted to find out about the Ugandan law that was being proposed. Well, they phrased the question, should homosexuals face execution?
Oh, boy, that was smart.
I think I heard something about this.
They did pull back from that, apologize, and change the story to, should Ugandans pass this law? And unfortunately, apparently the Ugandans have backed away from it. They're not putting the death penalty on homosexuality. They're just going to give you life imprisonment.
I think it was the premier or something, and they kind of decided that in terms of diplomacy, in terms of world diplomacy, and him having to deal with other world leaders and get money and get whatever, that they kind of had a little sort of light go on and go, oh, you know, other countries probably won't like this if we, you know, condone this.
Yeah,
so that's why they drew back.
Yeah, and considering the fact that you're best known for, let's see, a former president who used to eat people.
Exactly.
And a large wrestler who used to smack his belly.
Kamala, the Ugandan.
So guy. Apparently they figured they need a little bit better PR.
Yeah.
On that.
But it's, you know, yeah.
More civil rights news. Finally, men's rights have been granted in Nevada.
What?
Equality.
And what does that mean?
The Nevada State Board of Health has made a change in brothel registrations, which will allow men to be prostitutes.
Yay!
Even for other men.
Well, yay! Of course. Wow, so you can get dicked over two different ways in Nevada now, huh?
Yeah.
It seems it's some sort of twisted consolation for the for New York's failed gay marriage bill, right? No. Prostitution has been legal in Nevada since 1971, but places like the Shady Lady Ranch have only been allowed to offer up mares because health regulations require all prostitutes to receive, quote, cervical, unquote, tests for STDs. Since guys don't have a cervix, they're essentially banned from being prostitutes.
Wow.
They got a hole?
But on Friday, Shady Lady Ranch Madam Bobby Davis successfully petitioned the Nevada State Board of Health to allow men to receive urethral examinations instead. She was aided, of course, by the ACLU.
You know, one thing that's cool about
it... She wants more money!
Well, of course she does. That's what prostitution's about. But, you know, what's cool is a lot of guys will be able to now... gradually come out, or maybe not gradually come out, but guys will get to be able to, hetero guys will be able to fulfill their bisexual fantasies.
There you go.
They will have the whole menu.
They could have one of each.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, column A, little column B.
You would think the Nevada Brothel Owners Association would be ecstatic at the ideas of tapping into a very large, quote, people who like having sex with men market.
You would think.
But no. A spokesman for the Brothel Association, which you remember, makes money by selling sex, likened the changes to the brothel industry's Pearl Harbor. Incidentally, Brothel Pearl Harbor is a film we would definitely pay to see $12 to see Ben Affleck and Kate Winslet in.
So why do they think it's going to have a bad effect?
It doesn't say what their objection is. No, that's what... Wait, Flint... Okay, is that from...
That's the Las Vegas Sun reported what he was saying.
Yeah, but it doesn't say who. Time
that a valid reason for that thinking has never been acquired.
Okay, yeah, we worked hard for years to make the traditional brothel business in the state socially acceptable and something we can be proud of that most Nevadans accept. We have some concerns that this can be diluted by what Miss Bobby Davis wants to try.
Well, I think that gay people have worked hard and long to make that socially acceptable, too, so it seems like it's the same goal, ultimately.
So basically, the Nevada Brothel Owners Association went to protect the sanctity of prostitution.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's rich. That's perfect.
Beautiful.
That's perfect.
There's no sanctity in prostitution.
Well, prostitution is meant, the good Lord said, sow your seed in the belly of a whore, and not in the anus. So very simply, remember, whoreism is one man and one woman for the procreation of money.
And we all know that the thing that saves and keeps the sanctity of heterosexual marriage is the sanctity of prostitution. You know, there were lots of marriages that would have been dissolved without the sanctity, without the sanctity of prostitution.
I'm sorry.
Just ask Tiger Woods.
But we all personally know somebody who would have an argument on the subject of the sanctity of prostitution. They've been a regular host on this show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who you're talking about, but I've freely admitted I'm a former John.
Yeah, there you go.
To use the correct term.
Well,
I
wasn't thinking of you.
In my wild and extravagant youth, I wanted to have every experience possible, and I sold my lovely little body on about three or four occasions just for the fun of it.
If I said the words sacred sex temple.
but I one of the things that the madam guy or the guy who was the
madam,
the
yeah.
guy who got us jobs is it was really interesting because he said if you want to be a good hooker whatever word to use, he says the sound of money crinkling has to make you hard. Never forgot him saying that. I think there's something to that.
Okay. Let's see. Let's go one lot more political. Dallas is getting ready to possibly elect its first gay judge.
Ooh.
Dallas County has its share of openly elected officials, from Sheriff Lupe Valdez to District Clerk Gary Fitzsimmons to County Judge Jim Foster. Baba Foster, who chairs the Commissioner's Court, is called a judge. He's not a member of the judiciary, to which county voters have never elected an out LGBT person. Two Democrats running in 2010, John Loza and Tanya Parker, are hoping to change that. This is the first election cycle where I can remember we've had an openly gay candidate for the judiciary.
Don't mind Jimmy. He's a little slow
today. I thought
it
was four men. I'm sorry.
Oh,
okay. I did too.
Well, Tanya? Oh, you mean from the picture?
Tanya's kind of butch.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking it was not a bad-looking Hispanic guy.
I mean,
and which one's
earrings and the whole nine yards?
And which one's which one's GLBT?
one's
most professionals don't wear their earrings when they're wearing suits and stuff.
You never know.
Right.
I tell you, those queers are just getting in everywhere. I mean, there's no getting away from them these days. They're just everywhere. Used to be they stayed in their place.
Jimmy's been a radio host for 22 years, and he wears the crown jewels in his ears.
I said, where?
I said professional.
Professional that wears a suit. I'm not talking about professional glory hole.
I'm a professional sucker.
I'll give you that one too.
We won't argue with that either.
So apparently they're all coming out of the woodwork now.
Okay.
Yes, they are. It's about time.
Just loading for most severely.
All right.
Now you guys don't see what the cute
so
is why I picked
this
for.
One?
Okay.
I've read this one earlier this week.
So you understand. Just wait. There's more. From Chattanooga.
We should name this segment that. Just wait. There's more.
Sorry, my voice is getting ready to go. Fortunately, hopefully it'll be gone during the time while I'm gone from the show, and then I'll be back next week with
it. Okay.
A four-year-old boy, beer in hand, is accused of stealing Christmas presents from his neighbors. It's a strange story, but a sad one, too. April Wright is 21 years old and going through a divorce with her husband, who is in jail. She says not sure how her four-year-old managed to get out of the house, open a beer, steal the neighbor's presents from under their tree. They're just glad he's okay, and she won't let it happen again. The child, Hayden Wright, was found around 1:45 a.m. Tuesday, wandering the streets of his neighborhood, in police reports. Officers say he was wearing a little girl's dress, drinking a beer. Can we say drag queen in training?
Yeah.
Cross-dresser.
Drag queen in training.
The alcohol added. The police report the child had been taken to the hospital and treated for alcohol consumption. April Wright said her biggest concern is him being out there, getting kidnapped, getting run over, the alcohol, and having his stomach pumped.
Oh, poor baby.
Wright said when she woke up at night at 1:45 a.m., she panicked when she found Hayden was gone. She said she put safety devices on the door so her kid just couldn't get out, but Hayden was able to break the safety device off the doorknob and get outside. Once outside, Wright says her four-year-old followed in his father's footsteps and was found on Blue Spruce Road drinking. He runs away to try and find his father.
Dad really needed to hear that part.
Oh.
He wants to get in trouble so he can go to jail because that's where his daddy is.
Oh, God.
This is Lifetime movie
Hamilton
material.
Hamilton County Sheriff's Office reports said that Hayden rang the doorbell a few houses down and a neighbor answered, finding the child holding a partially consumed 12-ounce beer. Right, said he got it out of my father's cooler in the back, and then how he got it open, I don't understand, because it was one of those tab beers. But it doesn't stop there. The report said Hayden then snuck into a neighbor's house through an unlocked front door, stole 5 wrapped Christmas presents. One was a girl's brown dress, which Hayden was wearing when police found him. Going to the neighbor's house and taking their presents was very embarrassing. Thank God. You know, she's at least open-minded enough that she wasn't embarrassed the fact he was wearing a dress.
Yeah.
See, there's the silver lining. She admits she not being embarrassed but scared and rushed to the hospital that night with Hayden. She says she tries to be a good mother and loves her son but feels like a failure. Kids do these things and it's out of your control and the best you can do to be a mother. Everyone makes mistakes. It was a horrible mistake. Right,
honest mistake.
Children. She met with Children's Protective Services today who told her she would get to keep custody of the child.
Okay.
Yeah.
The one minor detail in that story, how did the kid get the tap that open? I'm like, you know, if you want to get a childproof cap open, don't get an adult.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
When I was 10, I was the one they handed the childproof caps to.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But that's a really sad story. It really is. Poor little guy.
But like I said, I mean, the thing is this, I'm impressed with the fact is, you know, I had trouble putting on a dress over at Jimmy's house. You know, and at my age, 4-year-old was able to slip into that dress with no problem.
I had to help him.
He's got a sense of adventure. Yeah, he's really, you know.
Okay, funny stories from across the pond.
He's going to look great at the prom.
A woman was, this is from England, I guess. Newcastle. A woman was given an antisocial behavior order, banning her from making loud noises during sex. She has admitted to breaching the order. Caroline and Steve Cartwright's lovemaking was described as murder and unnatural at Newcastle Crown Court. Neighbors, the local postman, and a woman taking her child to school complained about the noise. Cartwright, 48, from Washington on Wearside, pled guilty to 3 counts of breaching the ABSO. She'll be sentenced on January 18th. At an earlier hearing, next-door neighbor Rachel O'Connor told the police that she was frequently late for work because she overslept, having been awake most of the night because of the noise. She said, "The noise sounds like they are in considerable pain. I cannot describe the noise. I've never heard anything like it."
That says something about her sex life.
In November, Cartwright appealed against a noise abatement notice imposed in 2007, as well as subsequent ASBO, which banned the couple from shouting, screaming, or vocalization at such a level which would be statutory nuisance. Her bid was rejected by recorder Jeremy Friedman, who said it certainly is intrusive and constituted a statutory nuisance. It was clearly of a disturbing nature and was also compounded by the duration, which was not a one-off. It went off for hours at a time.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I don't.
Boy, he's good.
I was gonna say I don't mind these heteros.
You jealous,
having,
Jimmy?
I mean, I don't mind heteros having sex.
And he looks so ordinary.
Yeah, you know, just I don't know.
That's ordinary.
When heteros start keeping people awake at night with their sex habits, I mean, you know,
it was clearly a disturbing. It was further compounded by the frequency of the episode, virtually every night. Sunderland City Council told court they recorded noise levels up to 47 decibels. using equipment installed at the Cartwright neighbor's house.
I would get bored with it.
World Health Organization guidelines state that 30 decibels is enough to cause sleep disturbance.
Yeah. I would get bored. Even I would get bored with hearing it eventually. Yeah.
I've slept through hurricanes.
Good Lord.
So I this
slept
is the,
through ambulance.
This is the blonde girl who couldn't handle the noise.
So they need to move out in the country and buy a farm somewhere in the middle of a big field.
Well, that was a lovely story.
Yeah.
30 decibels is enough to disturb.
Is he doing his mother?
No.
What in the hell?
A couple of new stories coming out about Belinda Carlisle.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
80s pop star. Was the Bangles?
Is that her?
Oh,
that's
right,
Belinda
Bangles.
Carlisle.
Yeah. Wow.
That is her out gay 18-year-old son, James Duke Mason.
Oh, I got to see this.
Does he run out?
As everybody did.
He's cute. Turn,
hold that picture up to the microphone so we can all see it, Jim.
I want
to
see. Wow, he's cute. He's totally bangable. He actually looks a little bit like Matthew Shepard.
He's totally bangable.
Wasn't his dad a baseball famous baseball player?
I forget what he was famous for something.
She was married to a famous baseball player.
Yeah, he's pretty.
but there's an article about him in the January 2010 edition of Attitudes magazine. All about, you know, him coming out and his mother supporting him. She even did a non-music video on Facebook, I guess it was, or YouTube, or one of those damn social site things.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me, though, because she came out of the L.A. punk rock scene, and the Germs and Darby Crash, and there were a lot of out gay punk rockers that she was very, very good friends with, and it was a very open scene, so it doesn't surprise me. They were always a very liberal group.
Merry Christmas. I've come to the end of all my stories I had found, unfortunately. Let me see if I can find anything real. God, I'm going to lose my voice by the end of the show.
You only have 15 minutes.
She looks marvelous.
Yeah, she does. She does.
Yeah, she's really, she hasn't done the drugs.
And he's hot.
Oh, yeah.
She did have an addiction problem at one point, which she got over.
See, that's the one thing when you look at...
Interesting
these,
lady, though.
When you look at these things, these musicians later on, because... last week, they had a thing on VH1.
Mm-hmm.
I may have talked about this. I don't know.
The Recovery Channel?
No. Well, they had top 100 artists of the 90s on there. And they go through, and number 20 was Hanson.
right.
And this was a different type of episode, because what they did is they showed the artist then, and then they tried finding them now. And so they had Hanson now, although this was 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, what?
Yeah, they're still making records and
they're
selling.
They're still making music. Yeah. They still play bop.
They turn up in Rolling Stone really regularly at big events and all that.
But the part that, one of the comedians was commenting on that, and he goes, they're married? Even little Zachy is married?
They're handsome. You know, two of them got kids. They're handsome men.
Yeah.
Now, for Chicken Hawks, that's a big disappointment, but, you know, they are handsome men.
Yeah, they're still young enough. Well, then I saw, like, today, they were talking, one of the Jonas Brothers got married. It's like, one of them is old enough to get married?
Yeah.
Yes. The oldest one's 21 and 22.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Now, that's questionable as to whether you think that's old enough to get married, or smart enough to...
He had one of those purity rings on, so the only way he was, supposed to get lucky was if he...
Right, it seems like I remember Miss Britney Spears used to flaunt her, celibacy, jewelry fairly regularly.
Yeah, then she...
I think she was lying.
And other little Disney-type news. You mentioned off-air one time about this show on Disney Channel, The Wizards of Waverly Place.
Yes.
Well, it appears that it's believed one of the stars of that show has ended up on a website called Guys with Their iPhones.
Cool.
Oh.
A lot of pictures on this website are...
That narrows down the cast because...
It's the eldest son.
Yeah, it would have to be.
That it was not the...
So it's one of the guys on the show.
It's one of the guys, but he's not... several pictures on this website of guys with iPhones is a nude picture.
Mm-hmm.
His are not nude pictures.
Oh.
Which is good news for his Disney career.
But the fact is he's on a website that has those other sites.
He must be without a shirt or something, huh?
No, actually, he was fully clothed on him.
Well, then what's the big deal? Anybody can put any picture on any website.
But the fact is that you're on a website. Basically, this website is designed around guys who take a picture of themselves using their iPhone.
Yeah.
And most of them are nude pictures. This is where this is one site where they found pictures.
But newsflash, everybody, all kids take lots of pictures of themselves and each other on cell phones, fully clothed and sexy. And
but so it's on an adult website.
I think yeah, but if it doesn't have any clothes, he didn't know where it was going.
No, he has to post it on there.
Oh, he did it.
Sugar.
Oh, okay. All right, I get it.
Disney.
I get it. Yeah.
Image.
No. If he put
if he
sent it there on purpose, that makes all the difference in the world. It does. So.
Yeah, I always kind of figured he was family.
A lot of the Disney kids, the Mouseketeers over the years, have ended up, you know, coming out at some point or the other from the beginning.
So we're getting here close to the end. This is...
Yes.
Yay.
Why was this CD put back in?
I think you did it.
Well, you know, no, actually, what I've always wanted to know the full story on is the pedophile manager that NSYNC had... You know, when they were beginning their career and the whole, I mean, they've always talked about how part of, you know, that there were members that got into the group by having sex with, like, the creepy old manager.
And I thought that happened in every group.
Well, yeah, but this one was just too blatant to just, like, even, I mean, you had to sort of be deaf, dumb, and blind not to sort of see what it was all about. I mean, I thought it from the moment I saw a picture of this guy and the guy standing around, I was like, I remember this from, you know, drag bars when I was a young kid, that this kind of guy, you know, and how they operated with their groups of boys, and he just had figured out a way to make a lot of money, even more money than selling their bodies. They'll sell their voices. Mm-hmm. But I'd love to know the whole story of who actually did what with who in terms of that group and all of that story. Oh well, in a hundred years we'll be it'll get in the history books.
You were saying?
No, I was just going through it, make sure what time we have to start with our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Almost.
Like
there.
I said, my throat's
any more stories?
No,
yeah.
I kind of ran out of those. We don't have much. We only got like about 5 minutes. To stretch.
So who's doing what for Christmas?
I'm going over to the same family that I spent all the holidays with these days.
No.
Out in Crosby.
Ooh.
Where the deer and the redneck roam. I love it because there's some pagans, there's some Christians. It's a wonderful thing.
Beautiful.
And everybody loves everybody, and everybody gets along, and you know. And we don't have to turn, and at the end of the day, we don't have to turn on the TV or pop in a video so we don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite Christmases have been self-created extended families.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, very wonderful. I'm having, my younger brother is making turkey gumbo from the Thanksgiving turkey, and since we're all got Cajun blood, we're all pretty happy about that. And you know, I must admit, my family is all—I don't know if it's because my mom's so old or what—but we are all on such good behavior on the holidays now that it actually ends up being pleasant.
Oh,
you know, we get to like each other.
So how are you,
Jose?
I'll probably end up in Texas City. I'm not sure yet. Go see my parents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
See my family down there. I was with the family today here in Bel Air for a little bit. And so probably next week I'll head down to Texas City and see what's going on down there.
Okay. Wes? Cool. Wes?
Well, this year Christmas is going to be kind of quiet for me. We're going to do Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. And my mom's going to head out to Louisiana to visit
casinos.
Not casinos. She's going to go visit my... I guess you could call him my stepfather. They're not really married yet, but
good for mom.
He's
This guy your mom's dating.
Well, he's asked her to marry.
Yeah,
and she's accepted. They just haven't been able to marry yet.
Why not?
Well, there's a lot of circumstances behind that right now.
Okay.
She's going to go over to see the Yule log.
Well, no. she doesn't get conjugal visits.
Ah.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I. That was. That actually was going to be. That was going to be my guess.
Okay.
That was going to be my guess.
What are you going to do?
You've met them.
I think Sean's going to go spend time with his mom for Christmas, so it'll just be Chase and myself at the house.
Oh, okay.
So, because I believe my roommates are going to go spend time with their family, so it'll just be me and him at the house.
Okay.
Just going to have a quiet little day. I'm off Christmas Eve, Christmas, and Christmas Day, and the whole weekend. So.
And I might actually talk to all three of my siblings for Christmas.
Wow. Chris?
Oh, family stuff.
Family stuff?
Yeah. The whole family gets together in the late afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the full dinner and presents after I keep buying all this crap.
That's nice.
By the way, if anybody out there knows where you can find a Cookie Monster pullover hoodie, 713-526-573. Let me know where the hell I can pick one up.
Oh, my. That's the most wanted gift, huh?
I guess. My niece really wants it, and you know, I thought she was going to be screwed out of it because everything I saw online was like $80 for this coat.
Oh, my God.
Well, I found there's another version that's only like $30, but I still can't find either one of them.
Oh.
So.
You know, my friend that was my guest on the Native American show segment I did. He is coming out in his 40s and doing a good job of it. But he was telling me that his family doesn't celebrate Christmas and never have. And I just, it's hard for me even to imagine.
Are they Jehovah's Witness or something?
No, they're just could care less, I guess. I don't know. So I'm going to have to ask him more information. But I found it, you know, sort of refreshing, sort of like awe.
Yeah.
It's horrible, but it's sort of...
I'm in it for the decorations.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I mean, it can be crazy, but it has its really nice moments to it.
So what are you doing, Jimmy?
Hanging out with Judy.
There you go.
Yeah. No, we're going to have fun.
You're going to stroke her pussy, aren't you?
No, I probably won't even see her pussy.
But you will be both festive.
Yes. We're just going to hang out. Cool.
Yeah. Good.
It's going to be quiet.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Zydeco Pasta.
Ah, yes.
Mary is in the
house. Hey, Mary, I see her now.
All right.
She's setting up.
They're going to get my Cajun blood going on the way while I'm driving home listening to that
stuff. That's right. You're going to get that good Zydeco music. And there's John. John's here.
Yeah, she took off last week for her birthday.
Somebody turned 21 this year, didn't they?
Uh-oh.
You're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, and as we end our kind of the tradition we do here during December, we end with a certain song.
Yes.
A wish, a hope, that once again was deferred another year or two or 20, however you want to look at it. But once again, it's our wish to everyone, enjoy your holiday, whether it is wrapping up a Hanukkah or
the Kwanzaa.
Christmas, or we'll be back for the birthday of Kwanzaa, Yule, whatever it is you celebrate at this time, if it's just going out and looking at the sun, thinking happy thoughts.
And be safe with all the crazy, impatient drivers out there this time of year.
Best of wishes here from the crew of After Hours, and this is Melissa Etheridge with War Is Over.
Hey!
This is Christmas. So what have you done? Another year over, and a new one's begun. So this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young. Have a
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get
me. I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.